America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The panel investigating the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 comes to the scene of the crime today, meeting just a couple of miles from Ground Zero. The commission will confront current and former New York officials in public hearings today and tomorrow about why New York was not better prepared to deal with the terrorist attack. Members of the panel have said that many of their questions will center on the city government's failure before 9/11 to increase cooperation between police and fire departments and on why the city is still struggling to coordinate those efforts. Witnesses at the hearings will include Mayor Michael Bloomberg and his predecessor, Rudolph Giuliani.
My impression was that they're going to conduct a very fact-oriented and very objective study, the goal of which is to make recommendations about how things can be handled in the future.
Former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, in the wake of yesterday's assassination of the head of Iraq's governing council, Washington Post reports this morning of a general pessimism growing among both American and Iraqi officials that perhaps the country is almost unmanageable. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee may share those feelings. The panel is holding hearings today on the June 30th transfer of power in Iraq with witnesses including Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. Meanwhile, the Senate Armed Services Committee has unexpectedly announced plans to call three generals to testify on Capitol Hill tomorrow about the prisoner abuse scandal. It was not expected to take up the issue again soon. Scheduled to appear are General John Avezzad, the top officer in the Middle East, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, and Ground Commander in Iraq and Major General Joffrey Miller, head of detention operations in Iraq. U.S. military officials still trying to determine the origin of a roadside bomb containing the deadly sarin nerve agent. The bomb was partially detonated this past weekend. Officials believe the bomb was left over from Saddam Hussein's arsenals and that the insurgents were probably unaware of its contents. Still unknown is whether the insurgents had more of the weapons. The soldiers who removed the bomb experienced symptoms consistent with low-level nerve agent exposure. No one was wounded in Saturday's blast. Not without a degree of embarrassment, the State Department yesterday released its annual report on U.S. efforts to promote human rights around the world. The release of the report, scheduled for earlier this month, was delayed in the midst of the prisoner abuse scandal in Iraq, and not without reason. Charges in the report against countries who abuse prisoners bear striking similarities to those being leveled against the United States around the world. Lauren Craner, the State Department's top human rights official, sought to find the silver lining in the American shame.
Bad things happen in the United States and bad things happen elsewhere because people aren't perfect. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. Nobody in this room is perfect. The point about the United States is what we have to try and make people accountable.
Lauren Craner of the State Department, Wayne Gilman, Air America, Radio News.
Worry is emotional torture. It consumes you and robs you of happiness and peace of mind. Anxiety is worry gone out of control, and you can't help it. It tears at your nerves and rips at your heart. It makes your mind race in circles and keeps you from enjoying the moment. Sometimes people turn to medication or alcohol for relief. But medications can have negative side effects, and some medications, as well as alcohol, can be addictive, causing more problems. Anxiety and the worry that goes with it ruins relationships and careers and tears families apart. And people that love you, they tell you to just stop it, that you're doing it to yourself, but you can't because you don't know how. I can show you how. I'm Lucinda Bassett, founder of the Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety. Please, let me send you a powerful free tape that will provide you with insight and hope. Call 1-800-600-8892, and I'll send you this wonderful free tape. That's 1-800-600-8892.
Hey, have you heard? Cialis is here. Are you ready? Get to know Cialis. Don't miss another moment to talk to your doctor about prescription Cialis Tadalafil. Find out today if a free sample of Cialis is right for you. You can learn more about Cialis by visiting www.cialis.com or by calling 1-877-4-CIALIS. Cialis, it's here. Are you ready?
This year, you're going to quit smoking. Whether you've said it for years or you're trying for the first time, there's a revolutionary new system that's guaranteed to help you succeed or your money back. The smoking solution components have already helped thousands of ex-smokers kick the habit permanently. We guarantee you'll be completely smoke-free and cravings-free in as little as 7 days or your money back. Unlike gums or patches, the smoking solution is a complete system that includes natural herbs to curb your cravings safely without nicotine. We also include the slimming solution to fight weight gain, powerful antioxidants to help heal your lungs and body, and much, much more. Best of all, the smoking solution system works fast. In as little as 1 week, we can help you kick the habit once and for all. Come on, aren't you willing to give yourself 1 week to quit? Whether you're doing it for yourself or for the ones you love, the smoking solution system is the fast, guaranteed answer. In as little as 1 week, you'll kick the habit for good or your money back.
To order risk-free, call 1-800-305-2704. That's 1-800-305-2704. Call 1-800-305-2704 now.
The Air America phones are ringing off the hook.
I just wanted to complain about a comment you made yesterday.
Everyone's calling Air America Radio.
When the General Chief of Staff of the Army said we needed more than 100,000 troops over there, he was right. They made them retire early because that was not the answer that they needed.
866-303-AARZ. Call and let it rip.
Get brainwashed by the right-wing media that says that Kerry can't protect the country.
Air America Radio. We're listening.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning. Today we've got the liberal agenda coming up this hour, plus Kerry and Bush mark the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Topeka Board of Education. I am Mark Maron. I'm joined by Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott. Good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's hilarious, man, right when that music starts and everybody in the studio, it's 6:06, starts bobbing their heads like, here we go. The ship is about to take off. I wish we could leave, don't you? Don't you wish we could just all get in a spaceship just to cool people and just, you know, go to the planet where the cool people hang out and just sit around and go, man, am I glad we got out of there before that thing went up? Because I look at the news, Riley, and I'm just like, you know, the oil prices are going up. India is out of control. The assassination of the guy in Iraq. The president's got no control whatsoever. And there's part of me that's like, yes, he's going down. Bush is going down. And then there's the other part of me that's like, oh, no, what if they do something really weird, man? What if they do, like, what if they sabotage something just to, because I'm paranoid. I'm a little conspiratorial.
But you know what's coming, you know what's coming down to.
I know Osama's going to show up with freezer burn, and they're going to go, we got him.
No, what is starting to scare people now is how much pain are the American people going to have to feel in order for Bush to go down? This is not going to be a pain-free downfall here.
But he's not doing nothing.
I know.
He just sits there and he's just like, you know, he commits to his policies no matter what, and he's not doing anything. He's just sitting there.
Well, we're going to get into that later on this morning, the whole question of the handover of power to the Iraqis.
How about the handover power to Kerry? How about that? Is that going to be smooth?
That's domestically. And, of course, there is some word on the domestic front from 2 years ago. You know, a lot of these stories now are starting to come out from 2002, from early 2003. You know, there is, and I found this out yesterday, a Cambone watch that has gone.
A suicide watch?
Yeah. How long before he's absolutely gone from the lexicon?
Check Cambone's office. Make sure he's not dangling from the light fixture.
Yeah.
He's the Undersecretary for Defense?
Defense Intelligence, yeah. He was in charge of intelligence. He was Bush, apparently Rumsfeld's guy. He was Rumsfeld's point guy because he saw the war on terror in the same terms and in the same framework that Rumsfeld did.
Now he's got a new job, though, taking the hit for the Pentagon.
That's right, taking it on the chin for the team.
Yeah.
Hopefully he won't have to refinance his house anytime soon. An internal White House memo from 2 years ago is topping the news this morning. It says the White House was warned that U.S. officials could be prosecuted for war crimes. Now, this is not prosecuted in an international court. What was worrisome here was that Congress had passed a piece of legislation that could have conceivably made people accountable domestically for war crimes, for crimes that were egregious violations of the Geneva Convention. The memo in question was written by White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez in January 2002. Gonzalez has been with Bush for quite some time. I believe he was his counsel when Bush was governor of Texas as well. And in this memo, Alberto Gonzalez urged the administration to declare the war in Afghanistan exempt from the provisions of the Geneva Convention. In other words, Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters who might be captured or detained during the course of the war on terror in Afghanistan.
We can do whatever we want with them.
Exactly.
We are above the law. These are terrorists.
We are the law. That
right.
seems to be what they were saying. Now, this could explain why Donald Rumsfeld was so back and forth and so, you know, uncharacteristically wishy-washy about whether or not detainees were being treated according to the Geneva. Remember, there was a quote last week that we heard about that said, on the one hand, well, we weren't going specifically by the Geneva Conventions, but we tried whenever we could to treat them in accordance with the Geneva Conventions. I'm paraphrasing.
So you're saying in the back of his head he was trying to remember whether or not this paperwork would cover his ass?
Yeah, because he could be one of the people that might theoretically be held liable or accountable. That's what Gonzalez essentially was warning the Bush administration about. And guess who was the most angry individual about this memo?
Powell.
That's right. Secretary of State Colin Powell, who really felt like there should be no violations of the Geneva Conventions, period, end, so that, you know, everybody's covered, so there's no worries.
So because he knew that, you know, if you start to compromise the integrity of the Geneva Conventions, that, you know, if we transcend it, if we consider ourselves exempt, that they won't hold any real water in the global court ever. That, you know, if you alienate the United Nations and you say the Geneva Conventions don't apply to us, what barometer is there for international law when it comes to these things?
I just find it very interesting that the man who was the most outspoken on this and the most concerned about possible transgressions of civil rights in a war situation was the black member of the cabinet. The one man who probably has a sensibility and a feeling for civil rights more than anybody else, and yet he was the one they ignored. It's just so lacking in sensitivity on their part.
Well, they didn't ignore him totally. They did.
They overruled him.
They did, but they also retreated slightly from the original intent of the Gonzalez memo. In other words, they didn't out and out say, well, we're going to treat the Taliban fighters as exempt from the Geneva Convention. They kind of backed off of that just a little bit, which was, in fact, I think, a concession of Powell. But the thing about Powell is that he's a military guy. He understands firsthand what the consequences could be were America to violate the Geneva Conventions and American soldiers get caught up in any kind of wartime nonsense at any time in the future anywhere else on the planet. Because, as you point out, nobody else would then have to follow the terms of the conventions if America breached them first.
Right. So there's he knew just on a military level and through the history of warfare that these things were put into place to protect people, to protect nations, and to protect individuals. There had to be some law. There had to be some international law when it came to warfare. If not, then complete chaos would just unleash.
Right. Well, he has not just perspective, historical perspective, but he has, you know, personal experience that he brings to, you know, a concept, something that's kind of abstract. And he sees consequences. He's someone who can look ahead and reference it to some things that have already happened. And he was also the guy who believed, because he's a military man, that you have to have enough boots on the ground to get the job done. Rumsfeld's not.
You think
Rumsfeld's a kind of lean and mean, let's keep the budget down and we can do this with our new superior technological fighting machine, and he was wrong.
Yeah, do you think Gonzalez knew that, you know, ultimately this is what was going to unfold? Riley, do you think that like he knew that if we were going to treat the prisoners like this, that there was no way it wasn't going to explode like this, and he sort of had the foresight to say, we better put a cap on this now because this is going to blow up? Because it seems to me that they knew that they were going to, you know, and I know Gonzalez did this before. He did this in 2002. But it seems that once they started treating detainees like they were treating terrorists, that there was really little way that this wasn't going to leak out once they started taking pictures.
Well, I think Gonzalez understood that there was going to be, because of the nature of the war on terror, because at the very beginning, remember, this is now 4 months after September 11th. January 2002 is 4 months after the act. And I think that Gonzalez correctly surmised that America was not up to intelligence speed on exactly who they were chasing down and who they were fighting outside of Osama bin Laden.
So they
who else did they know?
You're right. They needed to have the freedom to beat the hell out of anybody they needed to get the information
they needed. The intelligence because, and remember, there were many, many reports in the wake of September 11th that said that they didn't even have people that were fluent in the language to deal with a lot of stuff. This is well before the run-up to the war on Iraq. This was a situation where people understood that they were going to have to get more information about who they were going after. And I assume that in this case, Gonzalez figured, well, let's find a way to get around it.
Let's protect our asses,
if we can.
Eat the hell out of them.
There's a sign today that they know that they were not getting good intelligence because they're finally have decided to halt those huge payments they've been making to Ahmed Chalabi. And
what?
His group. Well,
turned off the spigot?
They're going to. They've said they're going to. It's a spigot. It's like a waterfall. It's $335,000 a month that they
How
get.
How much?
$335,000 a month.
That's still not
that
as much.
The United States government gives to a group headed by Ahmed Chalabi, who's the official affiliated with the Iraqi National Congress, who, as you remember, was a long-time exile from Iraq and played a crucial role in persuading the administration that Saddam Hussein had to be removed from
with
power.
With bad information.
Right, but now they've realized that he gave them bad intelligence, and so he is being cut off.
Well, $335,000 a month?
That's
down
huge.
To zero? I mean, cutting him down completely?
But compared to what the friend salaries were, that's really nothing.
But they might have contributed better intelligence.
Well, Chalabi must have been a one-man...
Well, no, given that what we got from Chalabi, I think it's a touchy question.
He must have been a one-man Iraqi recovery to be making that kind of money in an economy that is essentially dead from the neck down.
I bet he's probably bought apartments in London and Paris. I doubt that money stayed in Iraq.
But he was a guy they thought was, even as dirty as he was an operator, and they thought that he was going to be able to, pull it all together for him, make some magic over there.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the Iraqi citizens don't even like most of these guys that were, in exile for the last 10 to 20 years that are coming back now to take a piece of their pie.
Well, now, all of these developments in Iraq are starting to drop the other foot all over the world in terms of the economic recovery.
The ripples. The ripples of Armageddon are upon us.
Well, the nation's economic recovery, America's economic recovery, if there ever was one, is now, after yesterday, officially on hiatus. A global sell-off Monday caused the Dow Jones Industrial Average to drop nearly 106 points below that Mendoza line of 10,000. Worse still for U.S. consumers, the price of gas has topped, this is the average price now, it's topped $2 a gallon, the first time the national average has topped that Mendoza line. Industry analysts say don't look for prices to drop anytime in the near future. As for the economy as a whole, some experts aren't very optimistic either. Here's Michael Metz, chief investment strategist for Oppenheimer & Company.
After we do get the rally, I think a lot of investors are going to have second thoughts about the outlook for the balance of the year. I think, unfortunately, the consumer will be badly affected psychologically by the rise in the cost of living, and this is going to temper, I think, personal spending in the second half.
Does that sound like a jitters to you?
We need a new CEO in the Oval Office. Still ahead, the president's Palm Pilot. Plus, up next, we'll find out what the British troops in Iraq think about the Americans right here on Air America Radio.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple, grilled onions and peppers, or made a fresh salad? The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers. They and their families earn their living crisscrossing our country to work long hours in our nation's fields to bring to us our bountiful harvest of food. The Harvest of Hope Foundation is the nation's only private nonprofit foundation which raises funds exclusively to aid this most hardworking yet often invisible group of workers. We offer emergency aid to migrant families and financial assistance for education for their children. We need your donations to continue this important and unique charitable work. Check out our Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673. That's harvestofhope.net or toll-free 1-888-922-4673.
My name is Kathy, and I met my husband Michael at eHarmony.com.
My name is Gina, and I met my husband Tom through eHarmony.com.
My name's Jennifer, and I met my husband Jack on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the hundreds of eHarmony marriages. Dating services give you a picture and a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. and then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
My name is Becky, and I met my husband, Tom, on eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy guys out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple? Grilled onions and peppers, or made a fresh salad. The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers. They and their families earn their living crisscrossing our country to work long hours in our nation's fields to bring to us our bountiful harvest of food. The Harvest of Hope Foundation is the nation's only private nonprofit foundation which raises funds exclusively to aid this most hardworking yet often invisible group of workers. We offer emergency aid to migrant families and financial assistance for education for their children. We need your donations to continue this important and unique charitable work. Check out our Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673. That's harvestofhope.net or toll-free
1-888-922-4673. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. Good morning. It's 20 past the hour. I'm with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. We are bush bashing shamelessly. I hate when people say that. You're a bush basher. Yeah, they appropriated a word generally used for, you know, for gay bashing. They're trying to feminize the moron. You know, but, you know, it's like, it's, anyways, we're moving on, man. We've got a guest with a great name. Is there friction developing between American and British troops in Iraq? Newsweek's London Bureau Chief Stryker McGuire has written a piece for the magazine's international edition, also available at MSNBC.com, about the differences in style between these two coalition forces. He joins us by phone from London. Stryker McGuire, are you there?
I am here.
Nice to meet you. I'm Mark. We're here with Mark and Sue.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon, yeah, whatever.
It's very early morning. How is the British style of peacekeeping different than the Americans?
Well, it's, as a rule, it's gentler. And it should be pointed out that they're working in a much less violent part of Iraq. But the British learned from their own experience in Northern Ireland a different style of peacekeeping, of patrolling cities once a war has ended. They made some very, very serious mistakes in Northern Ireland. They claim to have learned from that. But I think it's, the differences are also a bit more subtle, in the sense that I think that if you were able to do this calculation, you would find that British troops are generally a little bit older and a little bit more experienced than American troops, many fewer reservists in Iraq. They are more seasoned, shall we say, than the American troops, and I think that some of that has shown up recently.
Not all American troops. You're just saying, you know, some of the reservists and some of the less experienced American troops.
What I'm saying is that there is a difference in sort of just experience levels and in professionalism between the two armies, especially when it comes to what they call post-conflict situations.
Right. You even mentioned in your article that even there's sort of a difference in the way they wear their headgear, that there's something softer and something more human about
them. They tend to wear berets, and they were not allowed to wear those mirrored sunglasses, you know, that are very intimidating to people. You know, you stare into somebody's eye, you can't see the person really, you just see those sunglasses. They weren't allowed to wear those. The Americans now, in fact, have taken to not wearing those for the same reason. But the Americans, you know, the Americans are learning on the ground. The Brits learned these lessons some time ago.
So, Stryker McGuire, what results do the British troops get by what it seems to me you're saying being better trained and having softer attitudes towards Iraqis?
Well, that's a very good question, because they are part of the coalition. To the extent that the coalition is still at war, the Brits are too. They, I think it would be I think it would be difficult to extrapolate, for example, that the Brits are attacked less often, die less often. I think that the fact is they are working in a different part of the country, and where the violence levels have simply not been as severe as they have been in the Sunni triangle.
We're talking to Newsweek's London Bureau Chief Stryker McGuire. He's written a piece for the magazine International Edition. Now, how bad are these tensions getting, Stryker? I mean, are there real rifts between the two companies?
There are rifts. There are tensions. That does not mean that suddenly Britain is not going to be America's ally in this war. They will continue to work together. What we may see, though, we may see some subtle differences. For example, there are three sectors in Iraq today. The northern sector, which is under U.S. control. There's a kind of south central sector, which is the so-called multinational sector, which is under Polish command, and then there's the southern sector out of Basra, which is under British command. Now, the Spaniards are pulling out of the multinational section, have pulled out. The Poles are thinking about drawing down their numbers. Other countries who have much smaller contingents of troops are also reducing their numbers quietly. And the United States would like the Brits to move into that south central sector. Now, that includes Najaf, which, as you know, has been a city, the holy city of Najaf, where there have been a number of problems. The Brits are very wary about going there unless they can command their troops. So what we might see, for example, is the Brits taking over the command responsibilities that are now in the hands of the Polish. But then this is, I'll just add one element to this, which shows you how complicated it gets. You know, one of the efforts right now is to show that this is a multinational coalition. It sort of looks good if you have the Poles sitting there controlling their sector and you have Spaniards and Hondurans and Dominicans in that region. But if the Brits take that region over, then the coalition begins to look less multinational. It begins to look very much like a UK-US coalition.
Stryker McGuire, real quickly, is there any real difference, substantive difference, between some of this tension that you're talking about and the tension that was experienced during World War II between Britain and the U.S.?
Well, you know, I'm certain. I think it's a very different situation. There were, of course, tensions at the time. There are always tensions in war. There are tensions within armies. There are certainly tensions within nations who each have their own armies. These are to be expected. But Iraq is so fragile right now that these tensions are very important and can make things they can make things better if they're resolved, or they can make things worse if they're not resolved.
Stryker McGuire, thank you for joining us. Pleasure
Thanks. Talking
to you.
Yep. Take care.
That was Stryker McGuire. He's Newsweek's London Bureau Chief. You can read his piece on MSNBC.com and in the International Edition of Newsweek. It's interesting that whenever somebody says South Central,
you think L.A.
I immediately think, like, that's got to be a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. You pointed out about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that the British troops were coming under pressure to actually move north from their southern strongholds. And it seems like they're still resisting that pressure.
They are, but there are reports today that it looks as though maybe a few thousand more troops will go from Britain into Iraq. I think that, you know, Blair is really defending George Bush. He's saying that Britain is not going to pull out, and, you know, things are clearly kind of looking less and less stable given the
assassination
yesterday. I don't know if they'll move north, but they're moving a few thousand more troops in.
He's standing by his man.
It's not going down well, the British public. Very bad.
Still ahead, the presidential palm pilot, Bush and Kerry on Brown, and the all-important liberal agenda. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
I'm really impressed with Cortislam. And you know what? I like the way my clothes are starting to fit now. I'm Dr. Greg Cinamone. And since my field is psychology, picture this. You're getting ready for work and select a pair of pants that you couldn't come close to buttoning before. Today, they fit. That's how you know you're losing weight. But weighing yourself daily can drive you crazy. Why? Because many diet pills fake you into thinking you're losing fat when all you've lost is water weight. We tell our customers to stay off the scale and gauge your success in the mirror and by how loose your clothes are fitting. One national radio personality told me he gave up weighing himself. All he knows is, since Quarter Slim, he's fitting into pants 2 inches smaller in the waist. Yes, results vary, and diet and exercise matter. But in my opinion, Dr. Talbot's Quarter Slim is a true weight loss breakthrough. Stop weighing yourself and start losing the inches with Quarter Slim. Call 1-800-LEAN-316. 800-LEAN-316. 800-LEAN-316.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. The 9/11 panel investigating the terrorist attacks in the U.S. will resume hearing testimony today from a brand new venue, the City of New York. The investigative panel will be listening to testimony from former and present city officials in the shadow of Ground Zero, the scene of the worst attack on American soil. Senate Foreign Relations Committee will also be in session to review plans for the impending transfer of power in Iraq on June 30th. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz will also be in the hot seat. State Department yesterday released its annual report on U.S. efforts to promote human rights around the world, but the department reluctantly cited its own government for the scandalous prisoner abuse issue in Iraq. And the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the rights of disabled people under a national law meant to protect them. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
Are you losing your hair? Dr. Gary Gordon, Chief Medical Director at the world-renowned Gordon Research Institute, describes exciting new research guaranteed to solve your hair problem.
New data released by the FDA indicates that the body chemical dehydrotestosterone, commonly known as DHT, is the leading cause of hair loss. At our institute, we studied numerous hair loss treatments and found that Folinex is the most effective solution for stimulating new hair growth in balding areas. If you want to stop DHT from causing any further hair loss, then I strongly recommend that you try Folinex now. Folinex's DHT blocker has been used successfully for over 8 years by tens of thousands of men and women. Folinex is powerful enough to regrow hair on virtually anyone, we guarantee it.
Folinex is available for a limited time at half the price of other competitors. Folinex is guaranteed to work for you. So order risk-free now by calling 800-256-8214. That's 800-256-8214. Call 800-256-8214.
Isn't this a swell day?
Sure was a long, cold winter. But at long last, here it is, almost Memorial Day. Time to limber up your horseshoe pitching arm, hang that tire swing in the maple tree again, stop at the store for some country time lemonade, and wave adios to the ice and snow. Yeah, ice isn't a bad thing, really. It just belongs in a pitcher on a balmy afternoon surrounded by lots and lots of country time.
The Majority Report.
A lot of right-wingers like to create Hollywood as the evil empire. I'll tell you what, Hollywood is the only goodwill ambassadors we've got around the world. Everybody likes the cast of Friends. Nobody likes the president.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
We should be thankful for Jennifer Aniston.
And you know, frankly,
Drew Barrymore.
I am at the point where...
Sheryl Crow.
Jennifer Aniston, probably greater grip on international affairs.
Air America's Majority Report. Weeknights 8 to 11 on Air America Radio.
Ozzy Osbourne at 6:33 in the morning. I'm Mark Maron. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I am here with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott.
What happened to Ozzy Osbourne, by the way? Did he ever recover from his gardening tractor accident, and is he singing again, or is he still incapacitated?
It's all, you know, the word recovered for Ozzy is all relative. He's sort of in a permanent state of damage one way or the other, but I don't know. I think he's up and okay. I haven't heard otherwise. I'll have my friend who gets me the presidential palm pilot call Ozzy. Because he's got connections.
Well, last time I saw him, wasn't he in a neck brace and all bandaged up and, you know, might never perform again?
That would be a
yeah, they said that about Teddy Pendergrass, though.
Yeah, they come back. They come back
in a wheelchair, but he performed again.
So we got the presidential palm pilot from my dude in the Oval Office, the guy who cleans up there, because downloads this from the president's palm pilot. Here's the president's schedule today, Tuesday, 7 a.m. Wake up. Stay on message. Marriage bad. Wait, gay marriage bad. 7:15 breakfast. After breakfast, make list of second and third most important meals of the day. 8:35 a.m. Speak to American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Tell them that my boss is a Jewish carpenter. Leave before they realize you're not talking about Sharon. 10 a.m. Make random bold decision to look presidential. 10:15 a.m. Blame random bold decision on underling. Claim to be sickened. 1 p.m. Study Lyndon Johnson's I will not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president speech. You never know. 3 p.m. Schedule more sarin gas findings in Iraq, Syria, Iran, Cuba, Boston. 5 p.m. Order surgical strike on the New Yorker. Spare cartoon department. 7 p.m. Look at honorary doctorate again. Tell staff you want chocolate milk. Stat! 9 p.m. Lights out. Bump head on grandfather clock. 9:01 p.m. Lights on. Get into bed. 9:02 Lights out. It's good that he has to schedule that stuff. It might not happen if he didn't schedule it, you know? Oh, he's going down. I want him to, you know, it's like, I want him to go down, and then I get afraid for saying that because you never know if...
I can't breathe.
But Kerry is doing something interesting. He said, where was he? In Portland, Oregon. He said, I'm trying not to talk about it in politics. He's talking about Bush. He said, I want to give the president some space to get things done and see what happens. I wish the president would lead. He needs to lead. Lives are at stake. He needs to be really bold. I want to give the president some space. Did you mean to say, I want to give him a little rope?
No.
He hang himself?
He meant to say leave, not lead.
Oh, yeah.
I wish the president would leave.
Right.
Okay.
But, yeah.
You know, this is an attempt, I think, on Kerry's part to reach out to those independent, quote, swing voters who don't really want to see, a Dean-like attack on Bush and on Bush's policies. I think he's trying to you know, focus on the economy, focus on other issues, and at a point let Bush kind of self-destruct.
I think it's a smart strategy. I think it's great where he just says, I wish the president, it's not condescending really, but it's just sort of like, I wish he would lead, knowing clearly, it's like looking at a guy in a wheelchair and saying, man, I wish he would walk. I really wish it. He would just walk, you know, we'll see what happens.
You are impossible, aren't you?
No.
Yes, you are.
I'm being diplomatic.
But the swing states are the only ones that count. I mean, that's why everybody's really talking to them. I mean, the Bush is talking to his base. And Kerry really has to talk to the swing states. There's no other way to win this election.
Well, yeah, and both Kerry and Bush have to reach out to both black and Latino voters. And, of course, where would you expect the president and the guy who wants to take his place to be on the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education but in Topeka, Kansas?
They were there.
They were both there.
Yes.
And miracle of miracles,
yeah,
both agree that more work is needed to make America a truly colorblind
society. Genius!
It's absolute genius.
Wow.
They've been saying this since the 60s, but since the two of them reaffirmed it, I certainly have taken it to heart, that's for sure. President Bush paid tribute to the young people who first integrated schools under Brown.
The court could make an order, but it was a child that had to walk the gauntlet of slurs and jeers into a school. And America is still grateful to every child who made that walk.
Now, you heard that slurs?
Yes, what else? Like slurs.
Slurs.
Slurs. Down in the gutter stuff?
Yeah, slurs and jeers.
Slurs?
Slurs. Yeah, that's Texas for slurs. I guess. I don't know.
Is that what he's trying to say? Was he trying
to say? Yeah, he's trying to say slur.
Not slurs.
But he ended up slurs.
Yeah.
Well, he might have done some slurring in his time when he was drinking. He knows what he's talking about.
Good, very well. John Kerry, on the other hand, spoke about progress made in education in black America in the half century since Brown.
All of America is a better place because of Brown. Back then, only 4% of African Americans had college degrees. Today, nearly 20% are college graduates.
He sounds good, man.
That means 80% aren't, but, you know, let's look on the bright side, I guess.
I felt a little uplifted, though.
Well, if the economy is not that bad, there was a piece yesterday that I read about the people who are not getting ahead and for whom the economic recovery is not working are poorly educated African Americans.
Well, yeah.
These are the people who are being left behind.
Yeah, and it's actually been true for an awfully long time since Brown. But we have here a one-page synopsis of Bush's positions on civil rights. I think it's probably about a half page too long, truth be told. He is opposed to affirmative action. Of course, he filed a brief, an amicus brief to the Supreme Court, arguing against affirmative action. This was in the case of the University of Michigan. No Child Left Behind. He got it passed. He got it signed into law and then refused to fund it. 41%.
$5.8
billion. $5.8
billion. Wow.
Yeah.
But where'd that money go, man?
It's called an unfunded mandate. See, uh-huh. What he did was essentially say, well, you states will have to take care of the provisions of this.
And here's the amount you need to take care of.
And here's the amount you need to take care of. But don't expect it from us because we're busy cutting taxes and making sure.
And blowing things up abroad.
Abroad, yeah. That's where my money goes.
Uh-huh.
41% of white fourth graders and eighth graders were proficient or better in reading on a national test. This is last year. And that's compared to 13% of black fourth graders and eighth graders. Now, my problem is simply this. 41% of white fourth and eighth graders is nothing to brag about. Certainly 13% of black fourth and eighth graders is despicable and means that a lot of work needs to be done. But why is the bar so low for everybody?
Well,
41%?
Here's something that's worth going to see. I went to see the documentary yesterday afternoon, Super Size Me.
Oh,
about,
I heard
about the guy who goes on a diet of exclusive three meals a day at McDonald's. And one of the most fascinating parts of the movie was when he goes into the school system and he sees children and the junk that they're being fed at lunchtime, which is, the federal government allows these programs, encourages these programs, is lobbied by representatives of junk food, processed food companies. And there was a school where children had been really failing badly. They were out-of-control kids, and they switched them onto a diet that was healthy, with low fat, low sugar, and they started doing really well in school. So the documentary maker made the point that America is actually becoming, the children are becoming some of the stupidest children, educated children in the world, simply because they're being fed rubbish, and they can't concentrate, and their health is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I see how that sort of fits in with the way the school performance is falling off. But, I mean, the race question is really about institutionalized racism that never seems to stop.
Well, there's an institutionalized racism that comes from a lot of different areas. It comes from nutrition. It also comes from funding. It comes from the idea that black kids, 75% of black American children attend schools that are 75% black. Now, black people will tell you very quickly that they don't need to sit next to white kids in order to be educated, but the fact of the matter is that a lot of these school systems, a lot of these individual schools are so wholly underfunded by the municipalities that they're located in, that it makes it literally impossible. Here in New York, there was a court case that was adjudicated, said that billions of dollars has to come to the New York City school system, but the state legislature is holding it up.
We've got the liberal agenda up ahead, and we want to know whether you think racism will always be with us or whether there's a way to get rid of it forever. We'll take your calls at 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. We'll put you on the line here on Air America Radio.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want, where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-603-WORD. That's 603-WORD. 1-800-603-WORD.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple?
grilled onions and peppers, or make a fresh salad, the Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers. They and their families earn their living crisscrossing our country to work long hours in our nation's fields to bring to us our bountiful harvest of food. The Harvest of Hope Foundation is the nation's only private nonprofit foundation which raises funds exclusively to aid this most hardworking yet often invisible group of workers. We offer emergency aid to migrant families and financial assistance for education for their children. We need your donations to continue this important and unique charitable work. Check out our Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673. That's harvestofhope.net or toll-free 1-888-922-4673.
Having trouble sleeping? Then listen to the experts. Over 25,000 doctors, chiropractors, and sleep clinics worldwide recommend the biggest breakthrough in better sleep, the Tempur-Pedic Swedish mattress. Call now for your free mattress sample at 1-800-611-9977. The Tempur-Pedic mattress works like no conventional mattress can. Its high-tech material contours to your body, relieving the pressure points that make you toss and turn. It erases aches and pains, even for people with back troubles. In fact, 92% of owners surveyed say their Tempur-Pedic bed is far superior to their old innerspring mattress, air, or water bed. Judge for yourself. Call 1-800-611-9977 for a free sample of the Tempur-Pedic mattress material. You'll also get a free better sleep video and a 90-day trial offer guarantee. Want to sleep better? Listen to the experts and call Tempur-Pedic now. 1-800-611-9977. That's 1-800-611-9977.
It's 45 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. We're talking about racism. You know, is it with us forever? Can it be fixed? Do you have, even if you have personal stories of racism and overcoming racism, we'd welcome those. Sedition at airamericaradio.com. You can email us as well. Robert, what do you got to say, Robert? How are you?
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
I think the problem, I don't know about all of the problem, but certainly some of the problem stems from environmental conditions. People grew up with racism, perpetuate it.
Where are you from?
Racism is learned. It is not inherent in your DNA.
Where are you from, sir?
Douglasville, Georgia.
How are things down there?
I think we do a pretty good job getting along down here.
Good.
I think there's we're pretty much a 50-50 society as far as color goes, and no one has an advantage that they could use to beat the other guy over the head with. I think that all the stories you hear about the holding people back could possibly be less in the South now than they are in the North.
You know, there are a lot of black Americans who would make that same, come to that same conclusion, that in fact the South has been better at adapting to changes that have come in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education than in fact the North has.
Wow. Give us a call at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. We're talking about race. Stephen in Manhattan, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm pretty
morning,
good.
Steve.
I think that the idea goes well beyond race itself, and I think that the color that really matters is money, because here in this country and in many parts of the so-called civilized planet, it's a tacitly accepted agreement that those with money should be the people who should rule things, and those are the only ones who could be educated. You take away that idea in this world, and you realize that anybody can be educated, but unfortunately, I mean, look at Bush, whose daddy brought him through, essentially through an Ivy League school, who doesn't really deserve everything he has. This is a perfect example of how money can get, anybody what they need and want in this planet. But you take that away, and all of a sudden you have things that are beyond class, beyond the color range. You'll have people being seen as as people, as human beings, and not just, you know, well, they're black because, and because of that, they can't be educated or
right.
do this. So it's a big part of it is class. Yeah.
But Stephen, you know, there's a problem there in that when you get to a certain point in that kind of analysis, you would then conclude that poor white people and poor black people would have an awful lot in common and could unite and achieve some common goals, and that really hasn't happened in this country.
Right.
It really has not. You see, for example, the class implications of those seven people that got indicted over there in Iraq.
Right.
People calling them recycled hillbillies. There's a reason, and one of them is black.
Wow.
Think about that.
We'll be back here on. I keep going. Wow. We'll be back here with the liberal agenda and much more stuff on Air America Radio.
Remember the last time you bit into a sweet, crunchy apple, grilled onions and peppers, or made a fresh salad? The Harvest of Hope Foundation reminds you that many fruits and vegetables are harvested by migrant farm workers. They and their families earn their living crisscrossing our country to work long hours in our nation's fields to bring to us our bountiful harvest of food. The Harvest of Hope Foundation is the nation's only private nonprofit foundation which raises funds exclusively to aid this most hardworking yet often invisible group of workers. We offer emergency aid to migrant families and financial assistance for education for their children. We need your donations to continue this important and unique charitable work. Check out our Harvest of Hope Foundation's website at harvestofhope.net or call toll-free 1-888-922-4673. That's harvestofhope.net or toll-free 1-888-922-4673.
Today at 5 o'clock on Channel 7 Eyewitness News. Will New York make the cut for the 2012 Olympics? Eyewitness News is the only station reporting live from Switzerland with a big announcement. Plus at 5, we just caught someone red-handed. If you ever go shopping, it's What's Bugging You? Plus at 6, how's our water supply being protected from terrorists? Find out when Eyewitness News checks out security at our dams and reservoirs. Join Diana Williams, Sade Baderinois, and Sam Champion with the AccuWeather Forecast. Today at 5, only on ABC 7.
An all-new Oprah, ambushed.
That look is so bad on you.
The most outrageous makeover.
They need to make you look the young, beautiful woman you are.
Cut your butt in half, flatten your tummy, lengthen your legs.
We love the length of your legs, honey. We absolutely detest
you. The brutal truth nobody else is going to tell you.
We noticed the size of your butt.
The what not to wear girls are coming after you.
Why do you dress in such a masculine fashion?
Next Oprah.
Today at 4, only on ABC 7, followed by Eyewitness News and
Mary, can you overnight these to Boston?
Sure, do you want them first thing? Or it's a meteor and it's coming right at me!
Not many things knock you out like a migraine.
I suppose you'll want to take the rest of the day off then.
But you can knock out a migraine with Ralpax. Ralpax Elotriptan Hydrobromide relieves migraine pain and symptoms such as nausea and sensitivity to light and sound. For some people, it starts to work in 30 minutes. Ask your doctor. Call 1-866-3-RALPAX or go to RELPAX.com. Ralpax. Don't let a migraine keep you down. Only your doctor can decide if Ralpax is right for you. If you have certain types of heart disease, a history of stroke, TIA, or uncontrolled blood pressure, you should not take Ralpax. Very rarely certain people, even some without heart disease, have had serious heart-related problems. Talk to your doctor if you have risk factors for heart disease, such as smoking, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol, or if you're pregnant or nursing. Certain medicines that are potent CYP3A4 inhibitors should not be taken with Ralpax, so talk to your doctor if you're taking other medicines. See our ad in Fitness Magazine.
Good morning!
Good morning.
Tuesday, morning sedition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. God, sometimes coming in from these breaks with the music, it's sort of weird because it's like you get all excited and everybody's rocking and bouncing up and down, then it stops. You're like, oh, all right, here we go. It's like just enough to get us over the top. Then all right, here we go. So we're going to do a quiz. We got Jacob Weisberg coming on in the next hour. He's the author of Bushisms 1 and 2. I guess he'll be telling us about 2, but, you know, you get the idea. It's things the Prez said that seem a little ridiculous, stupid, you know,
not
out
just
of context.
Are all those things.
Poetically peculiar. So I'm going to give you guys a quick quiz. I got a list of things. You tell me if the president said them or not.
Yes.
Okay. No. Okay. We'll start with this one. We ought to make the pie higher.
Yes.
It is. Yes. Yeah. It's Bush. Here's one. We have a firm commitment to NATO. We are part of NATO. We have a firm commitment to Europe. We are part of Europe.
Yes.
No.
Who do you think said it?
Oh, who? Or did Bush say no?
It's not Bush. No, it's not Bush.
Oh, Dan Quayle.
Yeah, Dan Quayle. Yeah. Okay. Here, wait. The internet is a great way to get on the net.
That's the kind of thing I might have said without a coffee.
That's a Bob Doleism.
Oh.
That's a Doleism.
Yeah.
That's before he went on Viagra. He doesn't say that kind of thing anymore.
He doesn't
say
much.
Everything's great on the net, he never says.
Yeah, that's true.
Sign in, please.
Maybe he doesn't need the help anymore that the net used to give him. Families is where our nation finds hope, where our wings take dream.
That's definitely
Red Bush.
That's actually a great line of poetry.
It is.
Where our wings take dream.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And our dreams take wing.
That's like Whitman. You know, it's like one of those.
Yeah. Walt's brother, Paul.
Was it him?
It was President Bush.
Yeah.
Where our wings take dream. That's wild.
I'm going to write that down.
I'm up sitting here tripping out like, wow, I'm trying to wrap my brain around wings taking dream. And I'm like, I've felt that before.
That's the kind of thing you would get an A for in poetry class.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. One of the great things about books is sometimes there are some fantastic pictures.
Bush.
You.
Yes, it is Bush.
No. Oh.
We've got to pause and ask ourselves, how much clean air do we need?
No.
Iacocca.
Ah.
Oh, wow.
That's hilarious.
Like, friend of
what
Bush.
An angle on that.
Yeah, right?
It's like, come on, quit whining.
Is he a fob or a fog? Friend of George.
This foreign policy stuff is a little frustrating.
That's Bush. That could be nobody else but Bush.
My main hope for myself is to be where I am. Woody Harrelson.
Oh, I thought that was like Edie Brickell.
Woody Harrelson, you know, pondering in a stoned moment exactly what it's all about. I think we agree. The past is over.
Yogi Berra?
That is the greatest line for so many the wrong reasons. It's Bush.
Oh, it is Bush.
I think what was that other thing he said about history? Oh, I wish I could remember. He just said it,
too. Is too much of it?
No, he said that. I can't. I don't know if it's in the book. I'm going to find it.
I wrote it down in my notebook. I'll ask Jake when he comes.
I get to go to lots of overseas places, like Canada. Who said that?
That wasn't Bush.
I don't know. Dan Quayle again?
Britney Spears.
Oh, Britney Spears.
Yes, well, she's from a foreign country, Louisiana.
Well, how about then, Woody Harrelson, Britney Spears running ticket in 2008? There's an election for you.
Yeah. I'm holding out for Hillary. Sorry.
Well, Hillary with Britney, that'll be good.
I just got word from the producer. There's too much history. You can get stuck in it. But no, he said something like last week, too. I'm going to find it, and I'll come back with it, about history is dead or something. You remember he said it? Oh, it was about Iraq. Oh, man. I wrote it down, too. I'm going to remember it. You know, this is the kind of thing. Like, hey, how about emailing us if you remember what it was? It's like I will end history, or history ends with me, or something like that.
Something like that.
I've messed up history.
Well, that's for sure.
That's what he meant to say.
Oh, well, we'll all be dead. What difference does history, like, it's something like that?
Uh-oh.
He said it to Woodward, right? Yeah, I can't, we'll figure it out. Maybe someone can
email. Okay, he asked, wasn't Woodward ask him, maybe Bob would ask him how this would be seen in history or something.
What difference does it make? We'll be dead.
And he said, what difference does it make? Oh, yeah, we'll all be dead.
Right. That's it.
Oh. Whoa!
There's the facts from the Streisand compound with the liberal agenda for today. So get a pen or a pencil and a notebook. Here are your marching orders, liberal soldiers. 1, seriously consider voting in the upcoming presidential election rather than just saying you will and then not doing it. That's actually a good one. 2, support plan for American Olympic athletes to graciously lose gold medals in basketball, swimming, and track.
Impossible.
3, summer's almost here. Prepare costumes for Renaissance Festival, Burning Man Festival, and assorted gay-themed weddings. 4, protest prison abuse at Abu Ghraib. For 2 days, eat nothing but wheatgrass and protein shakes. And brown rice on the 3rd day. 5, plan tanning for Kerry fundraiser. There you go. There you go.
Lord.
What difference does history make? We'll all be dead.
That's right.
Yes, and if they didn't do it faster than ever,
in
Iraq.
Speed up the process.
There's more to come on Morning's Edition. Did the run-up to the Iraq war give a dangerous terrorist a free pass? Plus, Marc Maron's Dream Diary and transgender news. Don't worry, they're two different things. When we return on Air America Radio.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Ford Quality Check certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous 115-point inspection. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain, limited warranty coverage, and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by June 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
When I get one of my headaches, every minute of that pounding, throbbing pain is a minute too long. So when I take something, I want to make sure I choose the one that will get rid of that tough pain faster.
The moment of choice. Tylenol or Advil for faster headache relief. Truth is, Advil liquid gels rush relief to your headache faster than Tylenol. And Advil relief is stronger, better relief too.
Headache's gone already. Glad I chose Advil.
For faster headache relief, advance to Advil relief.
You're listening to 1190 WLIV New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. No surprise to many here. We can discover small elements of the toxic sarin nerve agent in the roadside bomb in Iraq has become political fodder on Capitol Hill for Republican lawmakers. Reports say they are touting the discovery of sarin as proof positive that Saddam Hussein had indeed failed to destroy his stocks of weapons of mass destruction. It was the White House justification for war in Iraq last year. Senate Republicans are being urged to talk about the sarin gas development in their floor speeches this week. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, commenting on the Iraqi sarin find, said there are still a lot of questions about the discovery. Rumsfeld, exercising caution, added that you just can't jump to conclusions.
What caused that to be there in this improvised explosive device? And what might it mean in terms of the risks to our forces, the risks to other people? And any other implications that one might draw, and that's going to take some time.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who recently returned from Iraq. Bush administration is still grappling with how best to handle the transition of power in Iraq, fewer than 6 weeks away. Yesterday's suicide bombing of Izzeddin Salim, the former head of the Iraqi Governing Council, was a major setback to the effort. Salim, a Shiite Muslim, was considered a key figure in bringing about a stable Iraq in the future. Despite his loss, Iraqi and coalition officials are adamant about sticking to the transfer date and making the transition work. 9/11 panel investigating the terrorist attacks in the U.S. will resume hearing testimony today from a brand new venue, the City of New York. The investigative panel will be listening to testimony from former and present city officials in the shadow of Ground Zero, the scene of the worst attack on American soil. Whether the city will be able to carry out the panel's recommendations is another question. New York is expected to get about half as much federal anti-terrorism funding this year as it received in 2003. President Bush and Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry found their way to Topeka, Kansas yesterday to mark the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court decision that cleared the way for school integration. Both men spoke to large, mostly black gatherings to acknowledge what is known as Brown versus the Board of Education. For the first time, both men agreed on one thing at two separate speaking engagements, and that is America still falls short of racial equality despite progress across many fronts. Those attending the Kerry reception were calling for a change at the White House, with many of them saying anything but Bush. Bush, meanwhile, is trying to make election year inroads among black Americans skeptical of his commitment to equal opportunity. And while in the spirit of civil rights, President Bush on Monday renewed his call for Congress to pass a constitutional amendment banning gay marriages. On the same day that Massachusetts began issuing licenses to gay couples, Bush said in a statement that sacred institution of marriage should not be redefined by a few activist judges. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
Attention, students, graduates, and parents. You could cut your student loan payments in half with the federal low interest rate programs available from College Loan Corporation. Thousands have already done it, and now you too can cut your federal student loan payments up to 50% or more. Call 1-800-CLC-1979 anytime, 24/7. College Loan Corporation will help you refinance your college loans and lock in federal interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. If you are not taking advantage of this program, you could be paying twice as much as everyone else. It's easy to apply. There is no credit check, no hoops to jump through, and in just minutes, you'll be on your way to locking in the lowest rates in decades. Let us make this a reality for you today. Call 1-800-CLC-1979. It's the smartest call you can make. Call College Loan Corporation today at 1-800-CLC-1979. That's 1-800-CLC-1979.
To the discriminating driver, a luxurious driving experience isn't an option as much as a requirement. That's why Goodyear developed the new Assurance, featuring Comfort Tread technology. Not only does this tire offer a distinct upscale appearance, it delivers a smooth, quiet, comfortable ride. Assurance, featuring Comfort Tread technology. It's the ultimate accessory for your luxury vehicle. For complete details and the retailer nearest you, call 1-800-GOODYEAR.
As a business leader, do you need more time to focus on your core business without ignoring your employees? GEM Human Resources is your solution. GEM HR will handle all of the human resource and safety outsourcing services that your organization needs. Payroll processing, benefit administration, HR compliance issues, OSHA safety administration, recruiting, and more. All at a cost that's less than you're paying today. With our team managing your human resource priorities, your team can focus on what's really important, your business. GEM HR combines state-of-the-art technology with experienced professionals to efficiently develop, implement, and maintain your human resource needs. You'll increase your productivity and grow your business. Contact GEM HR today at 610-975-9995 or on the web at GEMHR.com. At GEM HR, we believe happy employees are your company's greatest asset.
So what else is news?
4 out of 5 doctors recommend that you listen to this show. Did you know that? Well, try and prove that it's false. Not easy, is it?
Air America's Marty Kaplan.
Now, imagine you have to refute more than 100 of those silly scientific claims a day. That's how many a reporter for Popular Science magazine estimates we encounter on an average day.
Marty Kaplan, evening 7 to 8 on Air America Radio.
Hi, I'm Mark Maron here along with Sue Ellicott and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, Tuesday. We've got a whole new generation of Bushisms to share with you. Plus, today's top secret classified eyes only confidential presidential daily briefing. It's secret. Shh. That's coming up. Right now, it's morning. It's here. We got Mark Riley. We got Sue Ellicott. We got me. We got to thank Jason Didner out there in Jersey for emailing us the answer. I appreciate it. Woodward, the question, how will history view your decisions? Bush, the answer, history. History? We won't know. We'll all be dead. Thank you, Jason, for the prompt response.
Yes, Jason.
You know, I was you know trolling around the internet in the little world of conspiracy and weirdness, and there's this whole this is a big step for me, man. I mean, usually I'm the first to go along with conspiracy theories, and I'm kind of half going along with this, but I'm starting to think that maybe this one's not true. There's a strand of thought out there that think that Nick Berg was killed as a, you know, a subterfuge, I guess is the word, for the torture scandal by American covert operations people dressed as Arabs.
Arab militants, yes.
And the way they're seeking to prove this is that they have a chair. They have the picture of Nick Berg sitting in a chair, and they've isolated that the chair is the same type of plastic stacking chair that can be seen in some of the pictures of the Abu Ghraib prison. All right? And that they're trying to justify it. Like, and they also say that some of the people in the photograph are white And that might be true. They might be light-skinned, even if they are Arab. And also that, you know, they're standing in a way that only military people stand. Well, you also have to remember that some of these guys might have been trained by the U.S. military when they were
during the Iran-Iraq War.
Right. So, like, I'm not, you know, I'm not completely discrediting the conspiracy theory because, you know, part of my brain wants to go along with it. But what would be the point of having them say we're doing this as a reaction to Abu Ghraib? I mean, what? How would that be a subterfuge to anything and not just add more, you know, grist for the mill, if you will? And then, on top of it, there's some actual hard news today that comes out. I think it's an older story. It was originally
NBC News, and it was picked up yesterday at Slate.com.
Abu Musab Zarqawi, the guy who is accused of killing Nick Berg. Now, this guy was apparently one of the only terrorists in Iraq. You know, early on, this was the only connection that Bush had to justifying that there was terrorist connection between Saddam Hussein and not necessarily al-Qaeda, but terrorist factions. He was apparently in the no-fly zone, which Hussein had no real control over. A lot of people within the military world knew this, and they had opportunities to kill this guy. There were plans on the table that said, we can take Zarqawi out. Not once, not twice, but three times this was discussed by Bush and his inner sanctum. All three times, they made the decision not to take the guy out. Why? Because it would interrupt their political motives to, you know, invade Iraq. All right? Now, this is not like Clinton, like when they accused Clinton of not killing, you know, Osama bin Laden. Clinton took a couple shots. They could have taken this guy out, and they didn't because their motives were to go into Iraq no matter what. So on that level, just by a logical series of mathematical equations, Bush can be held personally responsible for Nick Berg's murder. Michael Berg was right in accusing Rumsfeld and Bush for his son's murder. And any other guys, any other people that Zarqawi is accused of killing or can be, you know, attached to Zarqawi's
700 people.
700 people can all be a direct, you know, directly connected to Bush's need to go into Iraq, to his political agenda over the agenda of actually fighting terrorism. There, I said it.
Yeah, you sure did. And, you know, this is a story that I'm banking right now will not go away like it did when it was originally done about a month ago, or a couple of months ago. Particularly, I guess, since the murder of Nick Berg, people are focusing on some of the, just like with the Gonzalez thing, they're right. Focusing on some of the early actions of the Bush administration and how the Bush administration chose to prosecute what it called at that time the War on Terror. And, of course, we all know that the War on Terror morphed into the invasion of Iraq.
That War on Terror actually starting to look like a subterfuge for them to go into Iraq, like that they were actually using it, you know. Afghanistan aside, you know, clearly there was indication that there were terrorist camps operating and that, you know.
Yeah.
But that outside of that, they were just using it to justify this neocon agenda that was in place 2 or 3 years ago. That not in place, but it was on paper, and these guys had an agenda. And this was, you know, Bush was convinced that this was the way to go. He was sold on it by Rumsfeld.
Well, he was sold on it, and the thing was, it was part of an ongoing plan of the neocons that you're talking about. They saw an opportunity right after September 11th. They saw that, wait a minute, now we've got the catalyst. Now we've got something that we can work with. Before that, they really didn't. It was just talk. Remember, they had gone to Clinton. A group of them had gone to, written a letter to Clinton saying, we need to deal with Iraq. So this is not something that they just dreamt up when Bush got elected. This is something they were going about trying to do for a long time. And all of a sudden, here comes the World Trade Center. And it's sad, and I think tragic in a way, that America had to experience this kind of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys took advantage of it.
Oh, yeah, they saw their window. They're like, yeah. You know, there are 3,000, you know, dead people in a smoking hole. And they're like, dudes, let's not look a gift horse in the mouth here.
Yep.
They didn't even do a very good job actually going after terrorists in Afghanistan. Because when they did have targets, apparently, everything was kind of held up by having to get permission to go in and I think military lawyers had to be able to say, yes, fire. and I've missed a number of opportunities to kill terrorists, suspected terrorists or known terrorists in Afghanistan. There have been reports about that this week, too.
And then they didn't stay the course there either. I mean, they immediately, you know, when they did this, whatever they did in Afghanistan was not enough because they drained a lot of the troop power out of Afghanistan and sent them to Iraq when that started. And I think Afghanistan now is in a certain amount of disarray. Like, you know, maybe it's settled into the old system of warlords. And I don't know what, you know, Karzai is just must just be sitting in an office, you know, wondering who's in charge of most of the country.
With his lovely clothes.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe
he dressed as well.
Yeah, overseeing the oil and heroin business.
But still the thing that doesn't quite make sense to me about the Jordanian militant Abu Musab Zarqawi, who had ties to Al-Qaeda, was whether Saddam Hussein had ties to Zarqawi. Because although that would have eliminated the cause for war, as that, you know, the Latin phrase casus belli, that's what people need when they go to war, Bush didn't really have one. He never declared war, but the point, the justification he made to the American people and to the world in general was that it was about Saddam Hussein's ties to Al-Qaeda. So even if they had gone after, had or had not gone after Zarqawi, how does Saddam Hussein fit into all of this?
Well, he was in Iraq.
Right, he was in Iraq, but we still don't know. I don't know that there's any direct connection between Saddam Hussein and Zarqawi.
Right. He was in the no-fly zone, and Hussein had no control over that region, so he probably had no connection to him.
But that's maybe still where Ahmed Chalabi comes back in again. Maybe he was saying he did have a connection. He was the guy who urged them to go in and remove Saddam Hussein from power, and we know now that his intelligence was very faulty. Either unintentionally so, or you know, made up and embellished for his own political reasons. You know, maybe it was Chalabi who connected Zarqawi to Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, the amazing thing about this is that you know, we're saying, well, Saddam Hussein didn't have control of southern Iraq, and Zarqawi was apparently able to roam around free.
Right.
Well, now the United States supposedly does have control of Iraq. And Zarqawi is still able to run around free.
They have no idea where he is. Like,
no, they don't know where he is.
Did you see that wanted poster, man? Wanted posters are such a trip, you know, because every one of those pictures, it's like they look like completely different dudes.
Yeah.
The Zarqawi wanted poster. I mean, it all looks so suspect to me. Where'd they get these pictures, and how can that be the same guy? And what is he, some sort of shapeshifter? Is he like some sort of strange mythical creature?
This is the thing that I think Americans have to really start looking to their government to do. Zarqawi's from Jordan, all right? Jordan is supposed to be one of our staunchest allies in the Middle East.
Jordan's a guy that he apologized to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
King Abdullah. You have other people that are involved in this terrorist activity that if they're not nationals of countries that are supposed to be our allies, they seem to be able to roam fairly freely, for example, in Pakistan.
Right, free agents.
Bin Laden is supposedly roaming around somewhere. You know, these people are able to move with impunity.
They can't find him. He's just like 7 feet tall and he's on a dialysis machine.
So this is all why it's so complicated, isn't it? Because it's not about countries. It's not about nationality. Osama bin Laden is a Saudi national, nominally a Saudi national, even though he might not have contact with his family. But this is not about agreements with countries or cooperation with countries or even issues or arguments with specific countries. It's just way beyond that.
But see, they just disappear into the crowd, I guess.
At some point, you've got to put all of these countries in a room and say, look, these people are running amok. We want you to do your part to see to it that they do not run amok in your country.
No, but beyond that, what
Bashar has no interest in bin Laden, you know, hanging out inside Pakistan. Doesn't help him. No.
But what you really need is you know, Muslims, you know, people who are intellectual leaders in the Muslim community to come up and unite and to try to stop all of this. That's what we're lacking here, is a united, reasonable, pan-Arab Muslim voice against terrorism.
Still ahead, Recovery Corner, and up next, The Dream Diary, right here on Air America Radio.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down.
But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd president of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax bush once and for all.
Want to turn your car into a stealth fighter? Invisible to all types of speed detection equipment, including radar and laser? Well, now you can with Phaser. With a range of up to 3 miles, the Phaser guarantees that you will avoid all types of speed traps. In fact, the manufacturer will even pay your fine if you get a ticket. More than a mere radar detector. The Phaser works by bouncing a mixture of radar signals and invisible infrared pulses to confuse the computer inside the radar or laser gun. The Phaser is the ultimate way to avoid costly speeding tickets. In fact, it has been made illegal in some states, so call now for details. Remember, the Phaser is guaranteed or your speeding ticket is paid. So if you never want to worry about hearing this again, go stealth and get the Phaser today.
To order risk-free, call now 866-794-6495. That's 866-794-6495. Call 866-794-6495.
Not available in California, Minnesota, Nebraska, Virginia, Oklahoma, or Washington, D.C. Certain restrictions apply to guarantee. Call for details.
My name is Kathy, and I met my husband Michael at eHarmony.com.
My name is Gina, and I met my husband Tom through eHarmony.com.
My name is Jennifer, and I met my husband Jack on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the hundreds of eHarmony marriages. Dating services give you a picture in a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
My name is Becky, and I met my husband, Tom, on eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy guys out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
Good God, it's Tuesday. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio. We're talking the world. It is now 20 past the hour, and it is time now for me to share more about me. And those of you who like me will like this, me being me more. More me from my head. This is my dream diary. As you know, my therapist has told me to write down my dreams. I share them here on a day-to-day level, and some people enjoy them. And it helps me. So I'm trapped. I'm trapped inside a painting. I'm two-dimensional and I hate it. I got my cheek mashed up against the outside. I'm banging my head. I'm screaming nothing. I'm not a pretty picture. So I'm suspended on a wall in an all-white gallery between a Warhol of Henry Kissinger and a Jackson Pollock that just keeps spraying itself on me somehow. And I think to myself, well, at least I'm hanging with some art worth seven figures here. All right, so now all these trendy sorts in different costumes of hipness wander around sneering at the paintings. But they're weird. They all look like they were painted by Margaret Keane. You know, they have those big sad eyes disproportionate to their faces. But they're attractive in a droopy way, you know. And one bloodless dork in a used work shirt and horn-rimmed glasses, he's like 8 feet tall, looks at me as a painting and says, so derivative. Marin affects a completely unearned street credibility. It's painful but banal, suburban kind of pain. I try to kill him with my bare hands and I shatter my knuckles. Then it's like his little piercy girlfriend says, Marin seems so self-indulgent without any redeeming brilliance. If he were somehow more self-indulgent and tedious, I could at least enjoy mocking him. I try to pee on both of them, and the spray bounces off the glass. Another guy looks at me and says, I don't get it.
He's an idiot, though. Then a little kid came up and just started laughing until his head melted, which was cool for me to look at. And the guard just stood there and did nothing, typical. Then one woman looked at me for a really long time and said, That's it. That's all she said. Then she jumped into the painting with me, and we had this long discussion about post-impressionism. We ate fondue, and we made love right there in the painting. And then she couldn't get out. Like, I gave her cab fare and everything, and she couldn't leave the painting. It was really bad. Then a couple walked up, and the woman said, they were looking at it, said, this one makes me really uncomfortable. And the guy said, yeah, I know what you mean, and they walked off. And I woke up, and my bed was filled with Toulouse-Lautrec impersonators.
Whoa.
That was a party this morning.
I knew that woman was going to get stuck in there.
Yeah. You did?
And also, did you notice how you unconsciously slip into a British accent when you're doing those sneery types?
Did I?
The girlfriend and the guy with the horn-rim glasses. Yes, you did.
Whoa. Was it unconscious?
I don't know.
No, I did. I thought I was just doing the standard snobby voice.
I think it was unconscious because you didn't give me that kind of ha-ha-ha look while you were doing it.
Wow, weird. I can't wait till I have a dream about you, Sue. I think I had one a while back.
I can wait, believe me. I can wait. I'm waiting. I'm happy. Happy to wait.
Well, here's some big news for transsexuals.
Yes.
Reaching out to the transsexual community. It has been, transsexuals are now cleared to compete in the Olympics for the first time.
Phew, I was really worried about that.
Yeah. Under proposal approved by the IOC, I guess that's the International Olympic Committee. athletes who have undergone sex change surgery would be eligible for the Olympics if their new gender has been legally recognized and they have gone through a minimum 2-year period of postoperative hormone therapy. So they got to be really, like, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, some of the women in the Olympics are close to being men.
That was only the East Germans, man.
Right, that's
come
right.
On.
Just the East Germans. What I'm hoping, though, is, like, first of all, depending on the transgender and how good the surgery is and a lot of other factors, this will bring a whole new element of excitement to the Olympics. You know, it'll have that sort of that weird kind of suspenseful excitement that sometimes you get at the gay pride parade.
Or Wigstock.
Or Wigstock or something like that. And I think it'll be really interesting when they actually approve steroids to be used. Because then you'll just have, like, these weird, like, you know, juiced up, ripped, hermaphroditic mutant athletes. You know what I mean? Just, like, running on the track. It'll just be like the monster parade.
I'm wondering how they'll do the drug test. That's going to be really messed up. Surely they're all going to fail. They have 2 years of post-op hormone therapy. There's bound to be something that comes up that's banned.
Well, that's what they're saying, is that they're saying they give this 2-year period so that sex settles in, because you would think that there would be an advantage for men who become women and then compete in women's sports, because there is a little edge to the men in some sports.
Like Renee Richards back in the tennis days.
Right, but they said that, like, actually once they get a certain amount of this hormone therapy, if a man's becoming a woman, that some of the testosterone gets drained away.
So that means pre-ops are out of luck.
Well, yeah, I would. Yeah,
the ones that haven't had the surgery yet.
No, drag queens are not allowed to.
No House of Wong? No House of Labasia?
Apparently female hormones can really help your performance as well. I remember once hearing an East German athlete talk about how right after she'd had a baby, how she had to get right back into training again within the first 3 months. Because apparently your body then is all awash with these, not male hormones, but female hormones. And that gives you an advantage in performance.
Oh, yeah? Oh. In what sport was that?
I don't know. It was athletics. She's either a jumper or a runner or something like that.
Uh-oh. A jumper?
For Jonathan, in my head, he just said chess. I didn't say it. I'm washing my hands.
Cynic.
But in a related story.
Why is this story related?
Because Harvard students, they voted for gender-neutral bathrooms.
Tell you why it's related, because it's the next one on the piece of paper.
Oh. No. It's about transgender, too.
This is for bright transsexuals.
Yes, exactly. For the honor league, honor roll transsexuals. Jordan B. Woods, political chair of the Bisexual, Gay, Lesbian, Transgender, and Supporters Alliance, that's a big umbrella, spoke to the council in favor of the bill, which urges Harvard to remove male or female designations from all single-occupancy bathrooms.
That's fine. Does it come with a training program to flush
and not pee on the seat?
Yeah, exactly. Then it's fine with women.
But I thought it was like group bathroom, single occupancy. Who cares? That's just, I mean, you know, it's just a single occupancy bathroom.
What, so now they just say take the signs off, and that's supposed to be some big breakthrough?
I mean, if there were two
Who
bathrooms?
Doesn't use it anyway?
I mean, if like in a restaurant, if there's a female bathroom and a male bathroom, they just take the signs off and anybody can go in?
Anyone can go in anyways. I mean, come on. I mean, you ever see guys standing there, even when the girls' room is open, the women's room's open, and they're standing there waiting for the men's room? It's like, what do you think's in there, buddy?
But you know what? It's usually the other way around, and it's sad because it's the women. Any event you ever go to, you see women lined up for days waiting to get into the two stalls where, on the other hand, men have urinals. We have that advantage.
That makes me mad, though, when women come out and you've been waiting forever and ever and ever, and then she comes out wafting with perfume in her hair or done in lipstick, like, no, you can do that outside or don't do it at all.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're taking the time for the poo smell to see.
Oh, see.
I always thought that was it.
Bathroom humor, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm stunned. I'm stunned yet so not stunned.
I have more to talk about with this stuff, but I want to get on with the other stuff. Maybe we'll come back to pee-pee humor later. Transgender pee-pee humor, yay!
I've been around single occupancy bathrooms in my time. It's not that big of a deal.
I always have drug flashbacks in them.
I mean, people have homes?
I don't do drugs anymore, but when you go into a single occupancy, you're sort of like, wow, if I was doing drugs, this would be good.
Well, we're going to talk about Bushisms when we come back, but first I want you guys to think about which one of these is a real Bushism. You know, the famous Bushism, though he tangles up his words.
Okay.
First one, I'm proud to introduce someone who served me well, as in his role as a new deputy, that is, the Secretary of Under Education.
That was Bush. Yeah.
They're all...
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to read you three, and you have to say which one was real. Next one, we're encouraged to see more Iraqis take responsibility for resolving the standoff in Najaf, or whenever you tax people what you're doing, you're directly making their wallets less bigger. Which did Bush really say? We'll tell you after the break. And later, we've got Recovery Corner here on Air America Radio.
I'm really impressed with CortiSlim. And you know what? I like the way my clothes are starting to fit now.
I'm Dr. Greg Cinamone, and since my field is psychology, picture this. You're getting ready for work and select a pair of pants that you couldn't come close to buttoning before. Today, they fit. That's how you know you're losing weight. But weighing yourself daily can drive you crazy. Why? Because many diet pills fake you into thinking you're losing fat when all you've lost is water weight. We tell our customers to stay off the scale and gauge your success in the mirror and by how loose your clothes are fitting. One national radio personality told me he gave up weighing himself. All he knows is, since CortiSlim, he's fitting in the pants 2 inches smaller in the waist. Yes, results vary, and diet and exercise matter. But in my opinion, Dr. Talbot's CortiSlim is a true weight loss breakthrough. Stop weighing yourself and start losing the inches with CortiSlim. Call 1-800-LEAN-316. 800-LEAN-316. 800-LEAN-316.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning, I'm Wayne Gilman. The Republicans have been instructed to talk about the discovery of sarin gas in Iraq in their Senate floor speeches. Vice Chair of the Senate Republican Conference, Senator Hutchinson of Texas, is leading the charge. Reports say they want to make the point that the war in Iraq was justified. Nonpartisan panel of the 9/11 attacks is shifting the focus of their work to the toppling of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York. Panel will be holding hearings in the shadow of Ground Zero today and tomorrow. They'll be looking for answers on emergency operations then and now. They'll hear from present and former city officials, including ex-mayor Rudolph Giuliani. More troubling news on the job front for white-collar workers. A research group says outsourcing jobs overseas will continue to grow over the next couple of years. And a billionaire financier, George Soros, sent graduates of Columbia University yesterday into the world with a sobering thought. The Bush administration has created a culture that encourages torture, transforming Americans from victims into perpetrators.
A good shave feels great. You walk around with your head held a little bit higher.
Real goddesses discover the new Venus Divine with moisture strips containing aloe and botanical oils.
The Venus Divine gave me such a close shave. I couldn't believe it.
I feel stupid being like, I love this razor, but that's how I feel.
The new Venus Divine from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
A clean shave makes me feel complete. It's that last finishing touch. It just does it.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, Your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-603-WORD. That's 603-WORD. 1-800-603-WORD.
The old Franken factor.
So, like, what are some of the stories that you're hearing?
The best thing that happened yesterday was a couple of canvassers told me that they had been out over the weekend and ran into a wild turkey that was trying to prevent them from going to a house.
Al Franken and Catherine Lanfer.
So I don't know if it was a watch turkey.
Clear conservative plot.
Yeah, but once they got past the turkey and began to talk to the voters there, they found a more welcoming group.
Air America's Al Franken. Weekdays noon to 3 on Air America Radio.
Hey, we're back on Air America Radio, and we are talking Bushisms. Before the break, we gave you three. Here they are again. I'm proud to introduce someone who served me well, as in his role as a new deputy, that is, the Secretary of Undereducation, or we're encouraged to see more Iraqis take responsibility for resolving the standoff in Najaf, or whenever you tax people what you're doing, you're directly making their wallets less bigger. Which did Bush really say?
The last one.
No, the correct answer is number two. We're encouraged to see more Iraqis take responsibility for resolving the standoff in Najaf.
Really?
Yep. You said that one? We haven't been involved in Iraq for quite long enough, but let's just hear it.
We're encouraged to see more Iraqis take responsibility for resolving the standoff in Najaf.
See, he does it so much better than I do.
Yeah,
I should really
have
him say it first.
He sounded just like, the original.
He just sounded like him, man. He sounded authentic Bush.
It's just that we're encouraged. Encouraged. Which sounds really, really, really discouraging.
With his Republican smirk.
Yeah, but we have an expert now with us, Jacob Weisberg, author of Bushisms, the Deluxe Election Edition. And he's going to deconstruct with us what is so misunderestimated about George Bush. Jacob joins us now on the phone right here in New York City. Good morning.
Hi, Sue. Good morning.
Hey, what are your favorite Bushisms?
No, God, where do you start?
Well,
where
quite.
Do you start? I sometimes start with the ones on the subject of education, just because there's something especially funny about that when he says, for example, one of the great things about books is sometimes there's some fantastic pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit alarming, isn't it? Especially when it's the Hungry Caterpillar, his favorite book.
Right, exactly. Or this is one of my favorites. You teach a child to read, and he or her will be able to pass a literacy test.
What are the Bushisms most telling? You know, what do they really show us about George Bush?
Well, that's an interesting question. I try to have it both ways a little bit. On the one hand, I offer these up for just purely for the amusement value because they're funny. On the other hand, I do think they tell you something about the president's mentality, and I have a introduction in the book where I sort of go into that, and I argue that Bush is stupid, but not in the way he sounds. My case is that he's stupid by choice. It's not that he has a low IQ, that he's been incapable of understanding or learning anything, but he sort of hasn't bothered his whole life, and at this point it's gotten to be a pretty bad habit.
But he can't even be bothered even if he could try because he's just forgotten how to do it.
I think that's right. Once you get to be a certain age, you know, if you're not interested in things and you don't make yourself try to learn things and understand things, you're not about to change in that fundamental way. So in that sense, I think that Bushisms offer a kind of proxy for understanding why Bush is stupid, but that it's not that he can't put a sentence together. Well, he can't put a sentence together, but that's probably a some sort of language processing problem, something like dyslexia, which doesn't mean you're stupid.
Do you think it's part of his appeal to people, like to voters? That, like, I always felt that, you know, when he stutters over himself and he seems like he's having a hard time, that I think he somehow gets pity out of people.
Yeah, I think there is a way in which it bonds him to the public. It makes him seem like a regular guy, like an ordinary person. And in some ways, you know, I think people like to feel superior to the president in one way or the other. And this is the way in which most people are superior to the president.
Our whole network is based on that.
Right. But, you know, but the truth is I don't know that you all sitting around making fun of him, and I do this more than anybody, really does him any harm. It may do him good because people say, gee, those leaders in New York are making fun of the president because he can't talk right. Well, maybe I don't talk right either.
Okay, Jacob Weisgerber, you're an expert on this as the author of Bushisms, and let us play you a few sound bites and get your reaction. Here's the first one, which we like to call 4,000 Hours.
The law signed today directs new funds and new focus to the task of collecting vital intelligence on terrorist threats and on weapons of mass production.
Weapons of mass production.
Yeah, you get that quite a lot, where he's reaching for a phrase, and he comes up with a phrase that is close, but no cigars, they say. There was a pretty good one just the other day, which I'm going to put up on Slate, where he said, "Like you, I've been disgraced by what I've seen on TV."
Okay.
You know, it's actually accurate in a way, but it's not what he meant to say.
Okay, here's another one.
And so, in my state of the union, or state, my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it.
Applause. He gets applause. Do they think that makes him more human or something? I can't deal with it. I cannot deal with it.
I asked Americans to give 4,000 years, 4,000 hours over the rest of your life of service to America. That's what I asked. I said 4,000 hours.
But Jacob, there is laughter there. I mean, is it uncomfortable laughter, or do people actually think he's doing comedy?
I think they appreciate the way he plays it off. You know, he starts to get into one of these situations, and at some point he looks up from his text and says, you know, I'm going to stop digging now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you have to sympathize with that situation. I mean, he's very effective at playing these things off and really turning them from a liability into an asset. At the first year of his presidency, at that White House Correspondents' Dinner, he held up one of these Bushisms books and said, you know, bet you didn't know I wrote a book. It's like Chairman Mao's little book, except it's not in Chinese. You know, he read a bunch of these and sort of made fun of himself and says, you know, I don't even know what I was saying there. It's funny. I mean, he doesn't get pompous and irritated when people make fun of him. Well, maybe he does, but in public, he seems to have a sense of humor about himself.
Did it help sales?
Very good quality to have in politics.
Could you then use that bit to your advantage, bet you didn't know I wrote a book, and then blurb it on your next book?
Of course.
The never-ending cycle.
Did it help your sales after he said that?
Well, he said there was even in that speech a Bushism, because he said... He said, "I've coined new words like misunderstanding and Hispanically."
Actually, that's a good point.
What he meant to say was, "I've coined new words like misunderestimate," which is probably his most famous coinage. But he said misunderstanding, which is actually a word. Even before he said it. So anyway, so that was a kind of self-reflexive Bush. That was a Bushism of Bush talking about Bushism.
Actually, Jacob, you mentioned Hispanic stuff. Do you think there's any chance that we could get a bilingual or a Hispanic, Latino, Spanish version?
There are some of those. You know, he says there are a few bilingual ones. He said he was on with Tim Rosser, and he said we're going to do something on December 15th, Diez y Seis de Septiembre, I think it was. Anyway, he had the number 15 wrong in Spanish, but he purports to be bilingual. I guess, you know.
He does have to reach out to Latino voters. That could be his way.
He does try to do that, and I think, you know, sort of a fumbling effort to speak Spanish counts for something, even if you don't get it quite right.
Jacob Weisberg, when all is said and done about the Bush administration, about this president, will people be able to separate a person's human intelligence from their political intelligence? Because George W. Bush may be a dummy, but he's not a stupid politician.
Well, I guess I'd put the argument the other way. I think he's a pretty spectacularly bad president, and I think that is actually reflected on some of these uncomprehending comments. I don't think he's dumb about politics. I think it's the one area where he's sort of shrewd and engaged. but I'm not sure that it's ultimately a successful strategy to be smart about politics and ignorant about policy.
Jacob Weisberg, author of Bushisms, the Deluxe Election Edition, thank you so much for joining us.
So, does President Bush benefit from the idea that he's an idiot, or is he crazy like foxes are? Call us and let us know what you think at 866-303-AARO. That's 866-303-2270 here on Air America Radio.
If you eBay or are thinking about using eBay or just want to make lots of cash buying and selling on eBay, then grab a pen to write down an important toll-free number. Last year, entrepreneur Adam Ginsberg did over $15 million in business on eBay. He wants to send you a free tape that explains how to make fast cash on eBay. He has engineered cash-generating techniques to sell products you would never think of and massively increase the value of items without spending much money. Using his program, you could develop a steady income by building your own eBay business. If you choose, you'll never have to work in an office again. Instead, you could sit back and turn eBay into your own private cash machine. You owe it to yourself to evaluate Adam's money-making opportunity absolutely free. Call right now, 800-900-3118 to get his free tape. That's 800-900-3118. Don't miss this limited-time offer to secure your financial freedom. Call 800-900-3118.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for, Shell.
Just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive and I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell report at www.shell.com.
Mary, can you overnight these to Boston?
Sure. Do you want them first thing? Or
it's a meteor and it's coming right at me.
Not many things knock you out like a migraine.
I suppose you'll want to take the rest of the day off then.
But you can knock out a migraine with Ralpax. Ralpax allotriptan hydrobromide relieves migraine pain and symptoms such as nausea and sensitivity to light and sound. For some people, it starts to work in 30 minutes. Ask your doctor. Call 1-866-3-RALPAX or go to RELPAX.com. Ralpax. Don't let a migraine keep you down. Only your doctor can decide if Ralpax is right for you. If you have certain types of heart disease, a history of stroke, TIA, or uncontrolled blood pressure, you should not take Ralpax. Very rarely certain people, even some without heart disease, have had serious heart-related problems. Talk to your doctor if you have risk factors for heart disease, such as smoking, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol, or if you are pregnant or nursing. Certain medicines that are potent CYP3A4 inhibitors should not be taken with Ralpax, so talk to your doctor if you're taking other medicines. See our ad in Fitness Magazine.
Good morning. Welcome. If you're just joining us, this is Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott here on Air America Radio. We're taking your calls at 866-303-AARO. That's 866-303-2270. Does President Bush benefit from the idea that he's an idiot, or is he really an idiot? Does he benefit? That is the big question. Right now it's time for the Presidential Daily Briefing for today, May 18th. This is the highly classified top secret document that the President gets every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled Bush Presidency Scheduled for Governation. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is distancing himself from your re-election campaign in light of your falling poll numbers. This news is particularly distressing because the Republican Party was counting on Schwarzenegger to lock up votes from the huge block of illiterate 18 to 25-year-old video game enthusiasts. His support would have many advantages. Unlike you, Schwarzenegger's epic struggles with the English language are considered charming. Plus, awkward non-answers to tough questions are far more acceptable coming from an unstoppable cyborg from the future.
This office suggests replacing Schwarzenegger with a replicant that can reassemble itself out of globs of shiny silver liquid. Failing that, you should beg him for any scrap of approval he decides to throw your way. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security. With a pretty practical PDB. All right.
Maybe Bush needs to start driving around in a Hummer like Arnie.
Mm. Oh, that would help him. Yeah. Stephen in Manhattan. Stephen, what's up?
Hi, how are you guys?
Pretty
good. Doing a great job, number one.
Thanks.
My take on Bush is he was swept up with his dad's being in politics, never wanted to be in politics. The Republicans, who are incredibly politically savvy, picked Bush to be a follower, to follow Cheney, to follow Karen Hughes, to follow Karl Rove.
Right.
He was exactly what they told him to do, which he's going to do, which he's not that bright. And by the time he's talking, he's trying to remember, what did Karen tell me? What did Karl tell me? What did Cheney tell me? What am I supposed to be saying?
Yeah.
And he can't concentrate. If he was, you know, Clinton talks for 45 minutes, because it's all coming from within.
He loves to hear himself talk.
Right. And he likes to hear himself write, too. He's sort of 900-page plus. But at the end of the day, Bush is just following along, and, you know, he got his money from the Texas Rangers and oil and all this stuff from his dad.
Yeah.
And the guy he's Joe Average, but I think the other guy, the author you just had on was right. He is Joe Average, but people do relate to that. And he's probably a very likable guy.
Thanks for your call.
God, I'm scared.
He's a follower. I just pictured him as this evil puppy. You know, trailing behind, you know, Condi and Karen and Dick. Just like, am I doing? No, I just did a Clinton. I'm like, I can't do a Bush. All right, hey, we got Bobby in Oklahoma. Bobby, how are you?
Thank God for Air America.
Yeah.
We finally have some sanity
air. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But as far as Bush being crazy or sly like a fox, no way, Jose.
Uh-huh.
This man was born with a silver spoon in his mouth,
yes,
and he's used to having his way.
Yeah,
and it's not so much that these people that he's playing, you know, to his administration tune, they're playing to him.
Uh-huh.
Because if they did not play to his tune, like the other ones they kicked out of office, their butts would be gone too.
Huh.
It's all about Bush, and he just likes having his way, and he could give two craps about America.
Thank you so much, Bobby. And thank you for using appropriate radio language.
Yes,
we appreciate that. I appreciate that. The number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. Larry in New Jersey, how are you?
Hello.
Hi. Hey, Larry.
Oh, yes. First thing, evil puppy. That's a great image. I would like to see that developed into a miniseries. two quick questions. There's a difference between intelligence and shrewdness. I think George Bush is shrewd, not necessarily intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Bingo.
Actually, the whole administration is more shrewd than smart. The other thing is that the conversation that I get into people, I found it's more effective to talk not about good president, bad president, because he is obviously a good president in that he's getting his agenda implemented. So he's very effective at that. So moving it from good or bad to effective or ineffective lets you talk about whether you believe he's doing the right thing or not. It's not a question. It used to be the are you better off 4 years or are you better off than you were 4 years ago? That's kind of a difficult question because the policies they're implementing are so far-reaching that it's not a matter of whether you're better or not, but is the country going to hell in a handbasket because of these policies.
But you think that I understand what you're saying, and you think that his language and his stupidity is just some sort of way to placate the regular people of this country?
I think he's genuine. He's genuine, but everything that you read about him even before the last election is that he will win at any cost.
Okay, so he's
And it was it was amazing to me that during the 2000 Florida stuff that they painted Gore as the guy who would win at any cost, when that's been Bush's character throughout every interaction with anybody in his life.
Well, thanks a lot, Larry. I appreciate your call.
He makes a very, very interesting point. I've interviewed a lot of politicians in my life.
Yeah.
And I've run across a lot of politicians who are at least as dumb as George W. Bush. But you know what?
They get what they want.
Not only do they get what they want is to stay in office.
Right. We'll be back with Recovery Corner and a strange little piece on David Duke. Remember him? The KKK
That's
presidential... candidates? Yeah. We'll be back on Air America Radio.
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eyes!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better-looking roof with Plictanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plictanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plictanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling. Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Smart business people know the difference between success and failure lies in the ability to grow. Being limited by your current facility adds up to lost productivity and even worse, lost revenue. You've looked at the price to build and keep putting it off, but have you considered the cost of not building? Now is the time to build that warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space you need with the General Steel Corporation. The General will show you how to save time and money with a steel building engineered for your area and to meet your needs. This is no metal box. General Steel will show you how to add the look of stucco, rock or brick to make that building attractive yet low maintenance and energy efficient. Call toll free 1-800-70-STEEL. If you need warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Whether you need a 60 by 120 for under $54,000 or a 100 by 150 for under $108,000, call the General now for free information. Grab a pen and write down this number, 1-800-70-STEEL. That's 1-800-70-STEEL.
As a business leader, do you need more time to focus on your core business without ignoring your employees? GEM Human Resources is your solution. GEM HR will handle all of the human resource and safety outsourcing services that your organization needs. Payroll processing, benefit administration, HR compliance issues, OSHA safety administration, recruiting, and more. All at a cost that's less than you're paying today. With our team managing your human resource priorities, your team can focus on what's really important, your business. GEM HR combines state-of-the-art technology with experience professionals to efficiently develop, implement, and maintain your human resource needs. You'll increase your productivity and grow your business. Contact GEM HR today at 610-975-9995 or on the web at gemhr.com. At GEM HR, we believe happy employees are your company's greatest asset.
Good morning. It is Tuesday morning. This is Morning's Edition. I am Mark Maron. Sitting to my right, Mark Riley.
Hey.
And further right, I mean just sitting, Sue Ellicott.
Hey.
To my left.
Further right.
Chris, our board
on my extreme right.
Uh-oh.
Is Sue Ellicott, now very happy with the coffee.
Oh, good. We all got our coffee.
I have my coffee. I'll be inching left.
Yeah. I'm Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
And in Recovery Corner, I reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. And as always, I'm offering my help to my temporary sponsor, George W. Now, yesterday, John Kerry, the man you blame for everything, and you guys stop doing that, by the way, said he was scarcely talking about Iraq on the campaign trail so he could give you some room. I wish the president would lead, he said. Wow. Wake up call, George W. Now, how isolated have you become that even your opponents want you to snap at him? Let's face it. Even the people that don't like you need you. How sad is that? And you might as well be needed if you can't be liked. And at this point, you can't be liked, all right? Sorry, I'm hurting you only to help you. So get back in the game, George W. I mean, it's clear to everyone that you're going to bottom out in November. That's clear. And it's hard when you know someone's going to hit a bottom, but there's no choice. So I guess what I'm telling you is try to live in the now before you say, I can't say, I'll try. We need all you can give. We know they're baby steps, but at this point, we'll take what we can get. Some things are true even when, you know, someone like, you know, your liberal opponent, John Kerry, says them. Remember, bend your knees before you bend your elbow. Sorrow is looking back. Worry is looking forward. You received without cost. Now give without charge. There is no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. If we don't grow, we got to go. It's alcoholism, not alcoholism. Works if you work it. Stay in today. Don't drink. That's a recovery corner for today.
You know what's going to happen at some point? There's going to be so many bits of advice. The recovery thing will just take up the whole show.
Oh, yeah?
As you keep on coming up with new little things to tell him.
Oh, you mean the slogans?
Yeah.
Well, you know, in recovery, there's no shortage of slogans. I just tossed it. And, you know, oddly enough, they can be helpful. And you'll find yourself at some point, you know, it'll stick in your craw, and one of those will help you out. That's what they're designed for. They're little sound bites of helpiness.
I like the bend your knee before you bend your elbow.
I like the work when you work it because it reminds me of an old disco song.
Again, well, I think it's a different intent. A lot of them are very catchy and very helpful. Here's an interesting story about David Duke.
That schmuck.
Yeah, the KKK dude, the white supremacist, who I believe was ran for governor of Louisiana.
Didn't he also have plastic surgery and change his look?
He tried to run for president, I think, is why he did all that. Well, apparently he was, you know, accused and convicted of fraud, and he was spending time in a halfway house. And he left his halfway house this weekend where he was finishing out his sentence for fraud. Evidently, he wasn't very happy there, and we got hold of the halfway house's suggestion box that Duke was reportedly stuffing with ideas and complaints. The suggestions were anonymous, but let's try to guess which ones David Duke may have submitted. These little slips of paper reading, isn't it way past time to take down the Kwanzaa decorations?
Oh, yeah, that's him.
Who left the really curly hairs on the soap?
That was Clarence Thomas.
Whoever borrowed my Outkast CD, please return it.
That wasn't David.
No,
why do I have to be subjected to this bilingual menu from Gordo's Mexican Food? Laundry rooms should have separate areas for washing and folding. David Duke. Laundry room should have separate areas for... No. Why does Sid always get to hold the remote? The Jews control the media. Who cut eye holes in the sheets? I guess we know who wrote those.
Yeah, right? Believe it or not, we're not finished yet in the last hour of morning's edition. The presidential palm pilot, Bush on gay marriage again, plus the morning devotional. This is Air America Radio.
So, you want to get the kids to their music lessons on time, even though they are tone deaf. You need a quick dinner. Think fast. Think eggs, like a microwave casserole with ham and cheese. Quick, easy, delicious. So, you make the lessons on time, the kids start an urban grunge band, and now you are the mom of the hottest act in showbiz. All thanks to the incredible edible egg. For other quick dinner, lunch, and snack ideas, visit AEB.org.
Incredible edible egg.
The American Egg Board.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the home of Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman, the nonpartisan panel investigating the spate of attacks on Americans on September 11th, 2001 is nearing the end of their long journey into what circumstances led to the attacks and what could have been done to prevent them. Panel is shifting its focus today to the site of the worst attack on American soil, the Twin Towers of the former World Trade Center. Hearings will be held in the shadow of what is known as Ground Zero. Panel co-chair, former New Jersey Republican Governor Thomas Kane, talks about the future threat of terrorist attacks here.
Every single expert who we've talked to on the commission says that sometime, someplace, whether it's next month, next year, whenever, that there probably will be another attack, that we can stop 29 attacks, but the 30th might get through, no matter how well prepared we are, and we're just going to make sure that we are prepared to the best of our ability.
Former New Jersey governor and 9/11 co-chair Thomas Kane. The weekend discovery of sarin gas in Iraq appears to offer evidence that Saddam Hussein did not comply with the United Nations efforts to get rid of all weapons of mass destruction. This according to American teams investigating the situation in Iraq. The discovery, however, in the last 24 hours is being taken for a touchdown among Republican congressional figures. Reports say don't be surprised by what will be a deluge of Senate floor speeches this week in which the sarin gas mine will be factor. Billionaire financier George Soros continued his crusade to slam the Bush administration. Popular philanthropist took his message to the graduating class of Columbia University yesterday. He sent the graduates into the world by telling them that President Bush has created a culture that encourages torture and transformed Americans from victims to perpetrators. More revelations from the inside the White House. NBC News is reporting that the Bush administration had several chances long before the war in Iraq to eliminate the most wanted terrorists in that country, but chose not to because officials feared it would undercut their reasons for going to war. Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, a Jordanian militant with ties to al-Qaeda, is now blamed for more than 700 terrorist killings in Iraq. Former officials told NBC that the administration was too obsessed with overthrowing Saddam Hussein to focus on preempting terrorists. More troubling news on the job front for white-collar workers, the Forrester Research Group said. The movement of U.S. white-collar jobs over the next few years appears to be accelerating, a lot faster than first thought. Technology researcher says they expect the number of American business service and software jobs to move offshore to reach 588,000 by the end of the year. That's up 315,000 a year ago. The loss of the U.S. software programming customer call centers and even legal paperwork could rise as high as 833,000. You're listening to Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman.
If you're in sales and aren't using WebEx, you could be losing money. Big money. With WebEx, the leader in web meetings, you get the interactivity of face-to-face meetings without the hassle and expense of flying or driving. And because WebEx meetings are so convenient, you'll make more sales presentations, which means bigger commissions for you. Go to WebEx.com for a 14-day free trial to see how powerful a WebEx sales meeting can be. Be where you need to be with WebEx meetings. Get started with a 14-day free trial. That's WebEx.com.
If you mess up one more thing, you're fired. That's what my boss just told me. Guess I can't blame him, though. I've been forgetting more and more things all the time. Small things and sometimes big things. Yesterday, I forgot a meeting. Today, I forgot our biggest client. I might as well forget my paycheck.
If your poor memory is putting your job at risk, you need to call now for a free CD on the most remarkable memory improvement program available. The Memory Optimizer shows you how easy it is to dramatically improve your memory now and protect it for the future without drugs or dietary supplements. You'll be amazed at how much more easily you remember names, dates, facts, figures, whatever you need to remember. Before you do another thing, call 1-800-900-8182 for your free Memory Optimizer CD. You'll discover how easy it is for you to improve and protect your memory in all areas of your life. Call now, 1-800-900-8182. That's 1-800-900-8182.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Listen to Air America Radio whenever and wherever you want. We're available 24/7 on the internet. Just hit our website, www.airamericaradio.com. All you need to do is complete a quick online registration. Once that's done, you're ready to take us live. Air America uses the Real One player for our streaming. www.airamericaradio.com. Streaming now, live, 24/7. www.airamericaradio.com.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition. Today, it's only Tuesday, but that's okay. We'll find out what President Bush is up to. We'll find out, and we'll get today's liberal agenda for you so you know which way your knee should jerk. That's coming up. Right now, I'm joined by Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It was a miraculous morning and night last night for me because I actually found myself disbelieving a conspiracy theory, which is very unusual for me because I am propelled. I love conspiracy theories because if they're really complicated and ornate, it almost feels like you're thinking about things. And there's a new conspiracy theory about the murder of Nick Berg where conspiracy theorists or people who are just, you know, investigating things closely with a certain amount of suspicion, and I'm certainly not judging those people because a lot of truth comes out of that, are saying that, number one, that Nick Berg was, you know, sitting on a chair, you know, and they have a picture of the chair, and it's the same type of stackable chair that appear in the pictures of the Abu Ghraib prison torture.
But wait a minute. These are the same chairs that you can find in community centers all over America.
Community centers, and I mean, I don't know what the origin of the chair was, but it is the same chair, and I guess on some level they're thinking, like, well, how those chairs get to Iraq. That's not the issue. The issue is also that they think that the Arabs were not really Arabs, but they were covert operations people disguised as Arabs.
White guys.
Yeah, because of the way they were standing. But, you know, there can be light-skinned Arabs, and certainly if it is Al-Qaeda or a terrorist network like that, we don't know where they all come from, all right, as far as their skin tone goes. As far as them being a military stance, many of them were trained perhaps during the Iran conflict or when the Mujahideen was trained by Americans, and that explains that. But the weird thing about it, they're so assuming that that this conspiracy was put in place as a subterfuge for the torture, that, you know, so we didn't think about the torture at Abu Ghraib. Yet in the video, they said they're doing it because as a reaction to the Abu Ghraib torture. And the thing that really gets me, did you want to say something, Sue?
Just that I thought, you know, that all those details that people say that make the photograph look so wrong. This is not like the faked photographs of British members of the military supposedly torturing Iraqis, which, by the way, remember we mentioned this last week or week before? Mm-hmm. They proved to be fake, and the editor of the tabloid newspaper, the Daily Mirror editor, Piers Morgan, was fired last weekend when I was at home. He refused to apologize.
Yeah,
they
really?
Said they were fake. He refused to apologize, and the board said, you are out. He was escorted by security from the building.
Who do you think he was, Rumsfeld?
Exactly. Right. In our country, you get fired for refusing to apologize. But everybody stands in that tough guy stance.
Well,
it seems that the details are a bit crazy.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, but there's part of me that wants to believe it because, you know, the whole thing is really giving me the creeps. But the thing I'm saying in response to the conspiracy theorists is that there's actual hard news about Zarqawi, about Abu Musab Zarqawi, the terrorist blamed for this, that would indict Bush in a more specific way. And the truth of the matter is Zarqawi was in Iraq. He was the only connection that the Bush administration could make to Iraq as a terrorist, to make a terrorist Hussein connection. He wasn't, you know, necessarily with Al-Qaeda at that time. It's unclear. He was living in the no-fly zone, so he wasn't under direct control of Hussein. But the thing is that the Bush administration had not one, not two, but three opportunities to kill Zarqawi or at least take a shot at him. And when it was discussed within the inner sanctums of the Bush administration, they decided against it primarily to continue their momentum into invading Iraq. So they made a choice to let this guy go free in order to, you know, attack Iraq. So any death that this guy is responsible for can be directly attributed to George Bush's administration. That's Berg, that's anyone, and the 700 killings that have been hanging on him that they claim Zarqawi was part of. So, I mean, that in the face of the conspiracy is much more powerful.
You know, the important thing that you just said was indict Bush because he could theoretically end up being indicted. Certainly his counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, was worried about the possibility that some members of the Bush administration might be charged with war crimes.
Right.
Under a domestic bill, not under international law, but under a bill that was passed by Congress in 1996. And it was Gonzalez who sent a memo to the White House saying essentially, look, we really are going to have to skip this Geneva Convention foolishness or you could be held liable. And Bush decided at that point, or the administration did, to kind of fudge a little bit on the Geneva Conventions. When it came to Taliban or Al-Qaeda, alleged Taliban or Al-Qaeda fighters or detainees.
Right.
And this was an effort to make sure that if their rights were violated under the Geneva Conventions, nobody'd have to pay for it. Now, Colin Powell found out about the memo or received the memo and reacted in the strongest possible terms. He was, he said, look, you're going to create a situation where American soldiers, should they get detained, would now not be subject to the Geneva Conventions because America unilaterally backed off.
You usurped the Geneva Conventions. So if the Geneva Conventions aren't in place for us, then there's no barometer of international standards when it comes to this type of stuff.
Exactly.
And it's amazing that, you know, this administration would micromanage on that level and have that kind of foresight to enable them to do the type of evil stuff that they do and yet still be protected. It's like, you know, they have no respect for international law. They have no respect for the UN. So if anything goes down, we're going to be alone in it. And then we're going to be judged against ourselves, which is that there is no rule.
And here's the real kicker to all of this. If the Bush mindset was at some point, look, why worry about the Geneva Conventions? Why is anybody surprised that people end up being abused in Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq? Well, it all flows from the same mindset.
Oh, here's the biggest irony of all. The only person we know who probably has been held, you know, 100% certainly, according to the Geneva Conventions, is Saddam Hussein. No one can possibly mess with him. And he's the one guy we know is guilty of authorizing human rights abuses and torture. He's probably had the best conditions of everybody.
They want to make sure he's got no outs. They want to make sure that he can't complain about anything. I read an article a couple of days ago that he's sort of like freaking out. He's freaking out that they're going to turn him over to the Iraqis who are going to do the Hussein treatment on him.
Pull his fingernails out.
Right. And he's also, apparently, he's subject to fits of weird kind of rage where he still thinks he's the president of Iraq, where he's just storming around the prison cell going, oh, you worked for me. I am in charge here. You know?
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dementia.
Delusional. I mean, that wouldn't be surprising, would it? I mean, anybody who ends up being a dictator must have some kind of delusional behavior.
He's probably saying, like, why can I not be treated like Papa Doc? Why can you not give me a house in the French Riviera?
Yeah, right.
Wait, where's Manny Noriega?
Millions of dollars.
I want the Manny Noriega treatment.
But, you know, there's something that we ought to call to our listeners' attention. There's a piece in the Washington Post today that's talking about the pessimism that has just, like, enveloped Iraq in the wake of the suicide bombing that killed the head of the Iraqi Governing Council.
That's what I just said. The guy was called yesterday, who was an intellectual.
Yeah.
He'd been in exile. And he was a philosopher. He was a thinker. He was a published writer. He'd edited newspapers and magazines. I do think that killing yesterday was very significant. It's a turning point in the intellectual direction of what will happen inside Iraq. I think the loss of somebody who plays that kind of thoughtful role, potential role in kind of recreating Iraq before the handover, which is going to take place in 6 weeks' time, is really damaging.
No, it's not going to happen.
They blew him up in front of the UN, the U.S. compound, the green zone, the area where you're supposed to be the safest and most secure.
Imagine that traffic jam where you're like, what? Can we just, please, we don't want to get blown up.
And, of course, remember that tomorrow in the Baghdad Convention Center starts the court-martial of Jeremy Sivits. At least it's scheduled to start. Now, maybe they'll postpone it.
There's going
to
be that big a draw?
I think so.
The Baghdad Convention Center?
The Baghdad Convention Center.
How many people? Is that going to be renamed the Halliburton Arena?
I don't know. Pavilion A?
I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was a report last week, actually, in the Wall Street Journal. A lot of these guys, first of all, Sivits is going to plea bargain.
And that
President Bush is staking so much of his reputation on the fact that we will bring these guys to justice. This is just a few bad apples, and they're going to be punished. they might not be punished very severely, if at all. First of all, Sivitz is going to plea bargain. He's the first guy up, so there'll be some kind of reduced sentence, even if he is found guilty. And some of the others, according to a piece in one of the Wall Street Journal editions last week, they're hiring this kind of dream team lawyers.
Yeah, they got good
people who have got other military guys off in instances that looked as though they were, you know, completely, they were going to go down for, you know, using unfair force in areas of arrest and detention. They got off. This is like they're hiring the equivalent of Johnny Cochran. This is like OJ going to trial.
Don't
expect all these guys to be punished, even if we look at those photographs and think there's no way these guys are going to get off.
Don't we want them to follow the train of command up? I mean, isn't that who we want to be punished? I mean, don't we want Rumsfeld to be punished? Don't we want...
We want it to go all the way up, but I don't think we want these people to get off.
No, but I would hope that these guys, if the lawyers are really good, that they will make it so it can take it to the next level.
Well, there is another question here. Brainer, the guy that...
He's the guy with the best lawyer.
Yeah, my God, well, so you should have had your coffee earlier. Mike, she's about to explode. She's like sitting there like in remission for 2 hours. I was like, la, 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 la.
No, but, you know.
Look, if we had an intern, I'd be a lot livelier at 6:50. Anybody out there who wants to be an intern?
Oh, my God.
Spell intern, G-O-F-E-R, intern.
Should I get the call number? I might get a cappuccino earlier in the day.
Still ahead, the morning devotional, and up next, the President's Palm Pilot right here on Air America Radio.
My name is Kathy, and I met my husband Michael at eHarmony.com.
My name is Gina, and I met my husband Tom through eHarmony.com.
My name's Jennifer, and I met my husband Jack on eHarmony.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. These are just a few of the hundreds of eHarmony marriages. Dating services give you a picture in a paragraph. We go a lot deeper. We start with a personality profile that features 29 dimensions of compatibility, crucial to a long-term relationship. And if you go to eHarmony.com right now, we'll give you this $40 profile free. And then we'll find you a soulmate based on compatibility in the most important areas of life. Visit eHarmony.com today. Get your free personality profile.
My name is Becky, and I met my husband, Tom, on eHarmony.com.
A lot of happy guys out there tonight, thanks to eHarmony.com.
Today at 5 o'clock on Channel 7 Eyewitness News. Will New York make the cut for the 2012 Olympics? Eyewitness News is the only station reporting live from Switzerland with a big announcement. Plus at 5, we just caught someone red-handed. If you ever go shopping, it's what's bugging you. Plus at 6, how's our water supply being protected from terrorists? Find out when Eyewitness News checks out security at our dams and reservoirs. Join Diana Williams, Sade Baron-Noir, and Sam Champion with the AccuWeather Forecast. Today at 5, only on ABC 7.
An all-new Oprah, ambushed.
That look is so bad on you.
The most outrageous makeover.
They need to make you look the young, beautiful woman you are.
Cut your butt in half, flatten your tummy, lengthen your legs.
We love the length of your legs, honey. We absolutely detest
Thank
your
you.
Pants.
The brutal truth nobody else is going to tell you.
We noticed the size of your butt.
The what not to wear girls are coming after you.
Why do you dress in such a masculine fashion?
Next Oprah.
Today at 4, only on ABC 7, followed by Eyewitness News at 5.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-603-WORD. That's 603-WORD. 1-800-603-WORD.
Good morning. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm with Mark Riley. Sue Ellicott were copied up.
The newly improved Sue Ellicott.
Oh, my God.
It was like it was two shots of espresso.
Look at that. Your head's about to explode. It was like it was almost, I freaked out for a minute. I thought we were in trouble. There's going to be Sue brain all over the wall.
Well, wait a minute. You know, you just said something that kind of struck me.
Let's do the Palm Pilot
first. Yeah, do the Palm Pilot first.
I got a guy that hacks into the presidential Palm Pilot in the Oval Office. He usually cleans up, but he helps us out. So here's today's Bush schedule. 7 a.m., wake up, stay on message. Marriage, bad. Wait. Gay marriage, bad. 7:15, breakfast. After breakfast, make list of second and third most important meals of the day. 8:35 a.m., speak to American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Tell them, my boss is a Jewish carpenter. Leave before they realize you're not talking about Sharon. 10 a.m., make random bold decision to look presidential. 10:15 a.m., blame random bold decision on underling. Claim to be sickened. 1 p.m., study Lyndon Johnson's I will not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president speech. You know, you never know. 3 p.m., schedule more sarin gas findings in Iraq, Syria, Iran, Cuba, Boston. 5 p.m., order surgical strike on the New Yorker, spare cartoon department. 7 p.m., look at honorary doctorate again. Tell staff you want chocolate milk. Stat! 9 p.m., lights out. Bump head on grandfather clock. 9:01 p.m., lights on. Get into bed. 9:02, lights out.
Aww.
I'm glad he has to make note of that stuff. So what were you saying, Riley? I said something that sparked something in your head?
Well, it was just when you said Marc Maron here.
Yes.
Because
present.
It's not the normal Marc Maron greeting. It's Marc Maron. It's kind of, you ever see Peabody and Sherman?
Yeah, I remember that. It's a cartoon, yeah?
Yeah.
With
he always
dog.
Said, yeah. Peabody here. Yeah. So when you said Marc Maron here, as opposed to, hi, I'm Marc Maron. I said,
wow, all the triggers are lit up.
I had
our
a Bullwinkle flashback up in here.
Our brains are lit up. The synapses are popping along quite quickly.
What's that? A school reference? Here I am at school. Marc Maron here. Is that what you say?
No, it's an old cartoon. Rocky and Bullwinkle. And they used to have a segment where they had a dog that was a genius. This guy Peabody and his assistant Sherman, who was a kid. And whenever Peabody would start the cartoon, he would always say, Peabody here. And he never raised his voice. Who was that? Edward Everett Horton, I think it was. Very famous.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was.
I remember seeing those Rocky and Bullwinkle things in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and I had no clue who they are.
Oh, they were one of the funniest cartoons.
It's a good cartoon. Yeah. It's a smart cartoon.
Very political.
So Kerry has been taking a lot of hits from his supporters and Democrats and some of his non-supporters for not addressing the Iraq war. And, you know, and he's addressing it now in his way. And he actually said, I want to give the president some space to get things done and see what happens. I wish the president would lead. He needs to lead. Lives are at stake. He needs to be really bold. He's doing some sort of weird kind of political jujitsu. He's sort of saying, I need to give the president some rope to hang himself. It looks like he's doing a pretty good job on his own, burying himself. Don't underestimate Kerry's ability to let this guy flounder on his own. That is a weapon.
Well, you know how much space he does need to give him? 6 weeks only. 6 weeks until the transition to Iraqi sovereignty, the handover on June 30th. That's all the only time that Kerry has to hold back on, and then after that, then they can really start sticking it to him.
But now here's the
central
question.
Unless something really dramatic happens, that's what gives me the creeps.
But Bush, and maybe this is something we could ask listeners at some point, because I'm curious about this now. It would seem to me that as far as Iraq's concerned, the Bush presidency is in free fall.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is no, I mean, you know, the stock markets in Europe are up a little bit, but even the markets are starting to react to this guy's
inefficacy. The money people want him out.
Yeah, the money people want him out. So if he's in free fall, does that make Kerry's strategy a smart one? Stay away, let him fall.
I think it does. I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, there's still plenty of time until it really gets hot. You know what I mean? As far as the election goes, he's got plenty of time to pace himself. And if he doesn't want to take shots at Bush directly, I think this is a great strategy because the Bush administration can't even manage, you know, the press right now. They, you know, things are just leaking on a day-to-day basis that are implicating them in all kinds of nastiness all around the world. The markets, like you said, are dropping. There's chaos in Iraq. And like, you know, the thing that scares me the most about Bush is that like, I don't put it past them to let something drastic happen to shift the dialogue. You know what I mean? And I get scared about that kind of stuff. And not that it's not drastic enough, but I think that to let him hang himself is a great strategy.
But can he find his feet?
I don't know. I think it is significant that, you know, Mark mentioned about the not handling the press stuff very well. I mean, this is an administration that has been the most secretive, certainly within living memory, maybe in terms of ever, and in refusing to declassify documents, in trying to, if not bar, but make extremely difficult for journalists to get information that the public should know. And that what we've seen over the Abu Ghraib prison abuse scandal, which I think is an absolute kind of watershed, it's woken up the press and it's woken up Congress. We've seen more sort of action, reaction from Republican members of Congress criticizing the administration. The press actually having some kind of advantage because information is trickling out and the White House has not managed to just put a lid on stuff. I mean, there were reports all through last week on how Karen Hughes, for instance, didn't know about the Abu Ghraib prison abuse stuff until it was already out in the media, and that behind the scenes they were scrambling to get a lid on it and to take control. They were not prepared, and I think this is the first time that we've seen them really that vulnerable.
I think Sidney Hirsch is
Seymour Hirsch
has inspired them. You know, I think that's finally, maybe hopefully, the press is coming out of that tunnel where they've been, you know, so frightened, you know, in a collective way to really criticize or attack this president, you know, even in a sort of objective way, that hopefully they're starting to feel like they have the guts to do it again.
But you know what? If Seymour Hirsch is inspiring the press, he's also inspiring the Bush administration for the second day in a row now. Mm-hmm. They are hitting the Pentagon, is saying that his account, this latest one, which I think is called The Gray Area, the third of his reports in The New Yorker,
is just
pure fiction. It couldn't happen that way. But if you look closely at what they say, they parse their words in such a way that there's still room for Hirsch to be telling the truth.
For them to get really caught.
Yeah. You know,
just because they've just got an unidentified source that, you know, they don't want to say, they completely deny it because they know they could get really caught.
Yeah.
And they're sort of hedging their bets.
What I think it is significant because they are not trying to dismiss The New Yorker as this sort of elitist, you know, New York kind of liberal, intellectual magazine, which is what you would expect the Bush administration to do. Because that doesn't play very well outside in middle America. The New Yorker is very well read in intellectual circles, and it's a national magazine, but it's not a big populist magazine. And yet everything's being picked up by Seymour Hirsch, who has done the most of anybody, along with CBS, to expose the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, and they have failed so far to neutralize him. His reports have been picked up by other people, and the best they can come up with is try to say that there's factual errors, he's not correct. But in fact, what he said was that there was a climate that was created by a decision approved by Donald Rumsfeld to allow interrogations, a secret operation to interrogate prisoners to try and get intelligence to find out about Al-Qaeda. They are blurring what he has said, you know, intentionally, and I don't think they're doing a good job.
Well, they're not doing a good job, but see, the thing about Cy Hirsch that makes him different than most other reporters is that he got a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on My Lai, and they tried to discredit him about that.
No,
but he turned out to be right.
Yeah.
You know, and he said that apparently in response to someone asked him, you know, I don't remember where it was, our associate producer said, that, you know, he's defended that. Like, I'm the guy that they said the same thing about My Lai to him, and he said, well, he turned out to be right. And he's going to stand by his word.
And he is the Bob Woodward equivalent on military intelligence, really. You can't mess with him.
Still to come, the morning devotional. Author and columnist Douglas Rushkoff on redefining Judaism, plus the liberal agenda as we roll on here at Air America Radio.
Planet Check. Who owns all of those trees in the national forest? We do.
Healthy forest? Think again. Americans are being restricted from commenting on the use of our public lands. Scott Paul, forest campaign coordinator for Greenpeace, explains.
These policies have been put in place to allow forest companies to forego the Endangered Species Act, to forego the Clean Water Act. Some of the most bedrock environmental laws in this country are being dismantled, and people are unaware.
60 million Americans get their clean drinking
water off of national forest lands.
There's decades of work to be done in our national forests just in restoration alone. Hundreds of thousands of logging roads to nowhere, scarring our national forest system, and these roads have a very adverse environmental effect across the landscape.
Branch out and learn more at www.greenpeace.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman. In just minutes from now, the 9/11 panel into the series of terrorist attacks will resume their hearings in the city of New York in the shadow of Ground Zero. Co-chair of the investigative panel, Thomas Kane, says every expert he's asked believes the country will suffer another attack on its soil sometime in the future. More violence reported in the Gaza Strip. Israeli forces moved into the densely populated Rafah refugee camp before dawn today while helicopter gunships fired missiles in two separate attacks. The Republicans are planning to take the sarin gas mine in Iraq for a political touchdown. The vice chair of the Senate Republican Conference, Texas Senator Hutchinson, is leading the charge, urging colleagues to raise the issue in Senate floor speeches this week. And hospital and immigrant groups are balking that a general health crisis will occur if a proposed federal law requiring hospitals to turn in undocumented immigrants to the government is passed. Wayne Gilman, Air America Radio News.
My graduation's coming up, and I want to look magnificent.
Real goddesses discover the new Venus Divine.
I want everyone to turn their heads when I walk by, and I don't think I could trust any other razor besides the Venus Divine for that day, because I can have the confidence to stand up there in front of everyone and know that I look great.
The new Venus Divine from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
If you feel beautiful on the outside, it makes you feel stronger and beautiful on the inside.
Having trouble sleeping? Then listen to the experts. Over 25,000 doctors, chiropractors, and sleep clinics worldwide recommend the biggest breakthrough in better sleep, the Tempur-Pedic Swedish mattress. Call now for your free mattress sample at 1-800-611-9977. The Tempur-Pedic mattress works like no conventional mattress can. Its high-tech material contours to your body, relieving the pressure points that make you toss and turn. It erases aches and pains, even for people with back troubles. In fact, 92% of owners surveyed say their Tempur-Pedic bed is far superior to their old innerspring mattress, air, or water bed. Judge for yourself. Call 1-800-611-9977 for a free sample of the Tempur-Pedic mattress material. You'll also get a free Better Sleep video and a 90-day trial offer guarantee. Want to sleep better? Listen to the experts and call Tempur-Pedic now. 1-800-611-9977. That's 1-800-611-9977.
Air America's Unfiltered.
Operation Desert Storm, which is the first Gulf War, right, under Bush's dad.
But it became the storm after the shield. Remember, first it was Operation Desert Shield.
Oh, that's right.
When we were just merely monitoring the situation.
Liz Winstead, Chuck D, and Rachel Maddow.
And then it became Desert Storm. And there's nothing better than a hail of cluster bombs. I always say, what a great storm.
Air America's Unfiltered. Weekdays 9 to noon on Air America Radio.
Good morning, I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley, Sue Ellicott, Morning Sedition, here on Air America Radio. Got a guest in the studio, you know, and I want to say, as a Jew, I like to stay on top of the latest advances in Jewiness. You always want to know, you know, who's the new Jew or the real Jew or what's Jewy, what isn't Jewy. Douglas Rushkoff's latest book, Nothing Sacred, talks about how the mission of Judaism has changed over time. He joins us now right here in the studio. Good morning, Douglas.
Hey, good to be with you.
Okay, it's nice to have you here. So you're best known for being a media critic and sort of, you know, pop culture critic. And how is that related to a book that you recently wrote about, you know, that is the recent book that I'm halfway through it, by the way, about redefining Judaism?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Judaism's basically a form of media literacy. You know, Judaism came about because of the alphabet. You know, originally people read hieroglyphics. Hieroglyphics literally means priestly writing.
Okay.
So along comes a 22-letter alphabet, and all of a sudden people are going, well, I can read and write the story.
Right.
In other words, so rather than just being handed down the story from the priests on high, people are now responsible for writing human history themselves. And it was a big revolutionary act, and,
And the Jews were on the cutting edge of it?
Well, they certainly were, you know. I mean, that's, you know, it's, there's this great quote early in the Bible where God says to Abraham, you know, you will be a nation of priests.
Right.
And everybody thinks that means, oh, we're all going to walk around with yarmulkes on our heads and robes and stuff.
Right.
But at the time, it didn't mean that at all. He meant you're going to be a nation of people who can read and write. And what's that going to be?
Right.
You know, and I still imagine, what would it be like to have a nation of people who could read and write?
So there was communication thing, which also
definitely
sort of falls into an argument about, you know, why do they always say that it's a Jew-run media, or it's a Jew, or show business is controlled
exactly.
by Jews?
I know. There almost is a little truth behind that great Jewish media conspiracy. I mean,
yeah.
These were people who, for a couple of thousand years, weren't allowed to own land.
Right.
So they became transaction specialists. Basically, okay. They were mediators between other people. So they were doing banking, or they were doing translation. They were doing media.
Right. So what? Now, you are Jew, or do you call yourself a Jew still? Or how is
she? Sure. I mean, it depends who you talk to. I mean, I'm...
What's the next evolution, though? Your book's about Jewish consciousness and how... Tell us the tenets or what you say are the important things about Jewish.
Well, you know, I've never seen Judaism as something to believe in. In some ways, I see Judaism less as a religion than as a way to get over religion. And if you read Torah and read Bible, what you see are these people constantly getting over... Pretty much, they're like cult survivors.
Right.
You know, they're getting over that.
Could you explain that a little bit about how that would mean getting over religion? I mean, by reading the Torah, how does that make you evolve past religion exactly?
These were people who way back in the old days, you know, 3,000 years ago, they worshipped idols. They worshipped really specific gods, things that they could believe in. And what you get with Torah instead, I mean, what the proposition of Judaism was, I don't know if it really is anymore,
yeah.
But what it was, wow, can you be a good and ethical and nice person without having this character God to believe in? I mean, can you do it based on caring about other people?
Not, so that's why you think that the Jewish God is sort of abstract and faceless and,
right.
and kind of...
Pretty much, yeah. They got him. They really, what Judaism tried to do was get God out of the way. I mean, back in the old days, people were sacrificing their kids to the gods. And I mean, some smarter people said, this is certainly not a way to win wars, right?
Right.
Or raise a family.
Yeah, right. Or raise a family. Let's see, how can we get out of killing our firstborn sons to the god Moloch? Well, all right. Maybe just take a little bit of skin off the tip of his little penis.
Yeah. So that's what circumcision is?
Yeah.
Circumcision is a sacrifice to the gods?
Well, yeah, it's a way, it's really, I mean, circumcision's for the father more than for the god.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's like, look, we got a kinder, gentler god. He doesn't need you to kill the kid. Just take a little skin off his penis. Maybe, you know, every quarter or so, give a goat, a nice sheep. And you feel better?
And we're even with God?
Yeah, it's really to make the people feel better because, you know, the world was scary and people were looking for a way to organize their experience, a way to look, if I give you this sheep, will you let me have some crops? Will you let my wife be fertile?
Right.
Let me, you know, do this or that. And it was a way to organize the chaos
they
of
had,
existence.
Right. They had to believe there was
right.
order. And so, but now how does this evolve into, like I was brought up a middle class Jew. You know, I grew up in New Mexico.
Right.
And my parents were the first generation of Jews to move as far away from their parents as possible for reasons other than leaving the country. And, you know, how did that happen? Because I have a certain resentment towards middle-class Jewishness, you know, because there's so many, you know, the trappings of middle-class Jewishness,
right.
you know, Ben Chagall Prince, or Mark Chagall Prince, and, you know, all the, you know, the synagogue, the Zionism from day one, you know, Holocaust movies, you know, I mean, how did it evolve into that, and what has it become?
Well, it's tricky. I mean, one of the reasons, there's really three main reasons it happened. One is this thing called the Reform Movement.
Right.
Reform Movement was a great idea. Basically, back in the 1800s in Europe, Jews, as they had been for a couple thousand years, were getting clobbered, right, wherever they went. And part of the reason they were getting clobbered is because they were so different from everybody around them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You walk into a Jewish synagogue at that point, everybody's with the books and dominating
their
things. So they said, look, why don't we make Judaism look like Christianity?
Okay.
That way, if they walk in, they're not going to be so upset. So Jews got big churches, they got organs, they put the rabbis in robes, they put them up on a stage, and everything got to look, you know, they did responsive readings. The problem was Jews ended up sort of with all the trappings of Christianity, but without the salvation, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Now Jews, instead of sitting around the table and arguing about God and Torah and the laws, they end up receiving ministry from these rabbis. So Jews got really distant from this thing.
Like a paternalistic thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So then Jews come to America. They don't have any connection to this thing, but they know over in Israel maybe some black hat somewhere is doing the real thing.
The real work.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to do this sort of fake Judaism that still lets me join the country club and lets me have a Cadillac and aspire to regular American nose job values, right?
Right.
Then, maybe I can at least just write a check, right? And do some checkbook Judaism over and let them do Judaism by proxy over there.
Yeah.
So Jews in America end up feeling really, you know, kind of distant and feeling very hypocritical towards the Judaism. So every time they go into this big thing with all this money and the jewels and the, you know, this sort of Joan River Judaism thing, they start to feel bad about themselves.
Well, alienated me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, alienated our generation of Jews.
Well, yeah, because it ended up making Judaism about the opposite of what it was. Judaism, when it started, was about breaking down barriers. Judaism was about saying there's no such thing as religion. There's no such thing as race. There's no such thing as us and them. It's just one world. We all got to learn to get along. We're going to write the rules. We're going to participate and be really smart about this.
And then you get this middle-class stereotype, Jew,
right, which believes, oh, Israel's this great nation and God gave it, and what the Torah is for is to prove that we've got this piece of land. So we end up with Jews being just as racist and superstitious as anybody else.
What about Israel?
I mean, how do you feel?
Israel, you know, Israel, Israel may have been a necessary compromise.
Isn't that amazing, though,
right?
The pause you took is that, like, whenever a Jew asks a Jew about Israel, you realize that, like, even you have to take that pause where it's like, I'm about to open
right.
a box.
Well,
here.
Basically, yeah. I mean, Israel's the other big obstacle there, right? Because Israel, instead of understanding Israel as what it was, which was basically a refugee camp, right, for people who've just been clobbered, okay, we're going to have to create a nation, had to create a place, get a piece of territory.
Yeah.
The problem is when we got all religious about it and start saying, no, it's not about survival. It's about now this is the place that God gave us. So this Torah, which was this great, almost Finnegan's Wakey sort of trans-dimensional document, becomes real estate deeds. See, here it says God gave us this piece, so we get that. So then Judaism, which was this super weird, abstract, boundaryless thing, becomes justification for a nation state, and that's a problem.
So that's the question of Jewishness and race.
Right.
That they are distinctly different.
Oh, for sure. And in some ways, you know, it's American Jews that have the big problem with Israel, not Israelis. You go to Israel, the great majority there is like, look, let's give back all that other land. Let's go back to 67, back to 49, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, even you talk to people on the West Bank, a majority of them, if they had the money to move inside Israel proper, they would do it.
Right.
You know, but it's American Jews and Jerry Falwell and Pat Buchanan and everyone who wants Jews to have biblical Israel to satisfy the sort of preconditions for the Messiah to come back.
Does this imply then that a Palestinian state won't solve the problem?
You know what? Can we hold that? Let's take some calls and we'll come back and answer that question. We'll take your calls at 866-303-AAR0. That's 866-303-2270. About, you know, where do you stand as, well, how old are you? I'm almost 40.
I'm older, 42.
I'm 40. As a Jew, you know, where are you at with your Jewishness? Give us a call.
You work hard, and you put in extra hours at the office, but you're not getting ahead in your career. Well, here's an idea. Maybe the best place to put in extra hours isn't at work. Instead, try earning your college degree via the Internet at University of Phoenix Online. A college degree continues to provide greater opportunity, responsibility, and reward. And by working just 15 to 20 hours a week at University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree in just 2 to 3 years. At University of Phoenix Online, we offer bachelor's and master's degree programs in business, management, accounting, marketing, IT, healthcare, criminal justice, education, nursing, and more. The fact is, it's better to spend a few years working on your college degree than to spend a lifetime working without it. Before you know it, you'll have the expertise and credentials you need to excel in your field. Call University of Phoenix Online today at 1-800-624-1890. That's 1-800-624-1890.
Mary, can you overnight these to Boston?
Sure. Do you want them first thing or... It's a meteor and it's coming right at me!
Not many things knock you out like a migraine.
I suppose you'll want to take the rest of the day off then.
But you can knock out a migraine with Ralpax. Ralpax Alitriptan Hydrobromide relieves migraine pain and symptoms such as nausea and sensitivity to light and sound. For some people, it starts to work in 30 minutes. Ask your doctor. Call 1-866-3-RALPAX or go to RELPAX.com. Ralpax. Don't let a migraine keep you down. Only your doctor can decide if Ralpax is right for you. If you have certain types of heart disease, a history of stroke, TIA, or uncontrolled
controlled blood pressure, you should not take Relpax. Very rarely certain people, even some without heart disease, have had serious heart-related problems. Talk to your doctor if you have risk factors for heart disease, such as smoking, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol, or if you're pregnant or nursing. Certain medicines that are potent CYP3A4 inhibitors should not be taken with Relpax, so talk to your doctor if you're taking other medicines. See our ad in Fitness Magazine.
Do nasal allergies hit you where it hurts most? Your wallet?
Yeah.
Then ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray, 50 micrograms. Flonase has the lowest average copay of any leading prescription nasal allergy brand in the nation. And now you could save up to $60 a year through the Allergy Rewards Program. Call 1-800-FLONASE or visit Flonase.com to learn more. Only Flonase is approved to treat nasal symptoms from indoor and outdoor allergies, as well as year-round non-allergic nasal symptoms that can feel like allergies. All prescription products are not approved to treat the same symptoms. Only your doctor can decide what treatment option is best for you. For best results, use daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. See our ad in Fitness Magazine. Call 1-800-FLONASE or ask your doctor or pharmacist about the medicine that's tough on nasal allergies. Easy on your wallet. All it takes is FLONASE. Allergy Rewards Program subject to eligibility.
Hey, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We are talking to Douglas Rushkoff, whose latest book, Nothing Sacred, talks about how the mission of Judaism has changed. And I am a young Jew, and when it comes to global events and being addressed with questions about what about Israel, you know, what does Judaism mean to you? I mean, you know, the whole Israel issue, the whole Israel problem or not problem, however you look about it, we don't talk about it much here. I don't know what we're afraid of, but, you know, generally it's a very frightening place to go, you know, as a Jew and as a network, you know, in some respects, because, you know, it's like it's one of those weird Pandora's box that once it's open, man, you don't know how there's not going to be any solution. There's going to be a lot of hate and bile spread around.
Totally.
What do you we're talking off. Once you finish your question, Mark, did you?
Well, no. What you were talking about earlier seem to imply in terms of Israel that simply the creation of a Palestinian state, which a lot of people think is going to happen eventually, is not going to solve the fundamental problem between Jews and Arabs on that land. True?
Probably won't. I mean, and that's for a lot of reasons. One, it's because, you know, the fundamentalist Christians need Jews to control all of biblical Israel in order for Jesus to come back. So if Palestinians have some of that, then
that's that American Christian Zionist.
Zionist. Yeah. Right, so that'd be a big problem.
I think we got a caller that's going to address some of this. Let's see. Omar in Westchester. Omar?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Fine, thank you very much. But I would like to know, do you think within 3 years, not only would there be a Palestinian state, but would the original people that, due to that war, be able to come back to their home?
Thanks for your question, Omar. Can you address that at all, Douglas?
Well, home is a tricky word,
yeah.
You know?
Okay.
I mean, because people even say, oh, well, the Jews deserve a homeland. You know, homeland is, for me, the word even homeland is, gets real.
Yeah.
European.
Is that a nice way of putting it, European?
Yeah. Well, we're Latin. We're Fair America, right? It gets a little tricky. But right of return is a tricky issue. The fact of the matter is, if things go the way they're going in Israel, Jews are going to be a minority there anyway. And almost by pretty much any way you dice up the land, eventually Jews are still going to be a minority there, just like whites are going to be a minority in America.
But why don't we address what you're saying before about how, you know, Jewishness is not, you know, bound to the religion or necessarily to, you know, the community activities of what we consider American Jewishness. Like you said off the air that what we're doing here on this show is actually more Jewish than what goes on in the synagogue in some levels.
Well, it's interesting for me, and I understand this isn't true for a great majority of people who would call themselves Jews today. Judaism was never intended as a religion. Judaism was intended as this way to get over religion. And the three main steps to do that are iconoclasm, abstract monotheism, which then lead to social justice.
Okay.
So basically the idea is iconoclasm. You smash the idols. You get rid of anything you actually believe in, particularly in a false way. Any idol, you get rid of it. So then you can let God become increasingly abstract. That means get God out of the picture, out of the way. what you saw was people were killing each other over God. So look,
right.
Let's get God out of the way so then finally we can look at one another.
Bring right? God into you.
Right, and act, you know, act nice to one another. That social justice is the only end that we should be fighting for.
Right.
And I don't know if Air America is the answer, but it sounds as though if to get God out of the way, then America should be the answer. A country that distinctly separates God from
Absolutely.
State, this should be the place
yeah.
where it should all work.
You would think. I mean, and right around, you know, in the 1700s, there were two great ideas. You know, one of them was this sort of Zionist one, saying, look, the Jews are getting clobbered every state we go to. Let's make our own state, right? So they're those guys. Then there was also this guy Spinoza, you know, the Enlightenment. And that's where they said, look, rather than getting clobbered everywhere we go, why don't we separate church and state? I mean, it was Spinoza, this Dutch Jew, that said,
yeah.
that's going to be the easy way to get over this problem. And that was the smart one. And in some sense, America in that way is more Jewish than Israel, because America, well, not in practice, but certainly in theory, is the idea of divorcing church and state so that
right.
people can just believe whatever they want.
Interesting. Thank you, Douglas Rushkoff. I'm sure there are people seething at home in their bedrooms next to their phone going, I just need to talk to that man. Douglas Rushkoff, the author of Nothing Sacred. It's a good book. I'm halfway through it. I'm enjoying it. Please stay with us here on Air America Radio. We'll be back with the liberal agenda and some nice things.
As a business leader, do you need more time to focus on your core business without ignoring your employees? GEM Human Resources is your solution. GEM HR will handle all of the human resource and safety outsourcing services that your organization needs. Payroll processing, benefit administration, HR compliance issues, OSHA safety administration, recruiting, and more. All at a cost that's less than you're paying today. With our team managing your human resource priorities, your team can focus on what's really important, your business. GEM HR combines state-of-the-art technology with experienced professionals to efficiently develop, implement, and maintain your human resource needs. You'll increase your productivity and grow your business. Contact GEM HR today at 610-975-9995 or on the web at GEMHR.com. At GEM HR, we believe happy employees are your company's greatest asset.
A lot of birds winter here. To go out to the wetlands, you have a pretty strong likelihood of seeing bald eagles.
It's also an important nursery ground for fish.
Crystal Kane and Dr. Michael McCrander are environmentalists. They're helping restore Louisiana's sensitive coastal wetland.
Louisiana has about 40% of the nation's wetlands.
But 80% of the wetland losses have occurred in Louisiana.
Their help is vital to the wetland, to our energy needs, and to the companies they work for, Shell and its affiliates.
As you lose the wetland buffer, you lose your protection. And when you lose your protection, it impacts our country's energy.
If the system goes away, all of our options are gone. Shell understands that.
While the wetland also protects a quarter of the country's energy supply, that's not the only reason these two are here.
It's our backyard.
To find out more, visit Shell.com.
In 1988, a weed appeared in the garden when George Herbert Walker Bush was sworn in as the 41st President of the United States. Over the next 4 years, that weed grew into a big bush. After a war with Iraq, a deficit buildup, and job losses at home, the people stormed the garden and chopped that bush down. But the conservative roots spread deep and wide and grew back. That little sprout grew into an even bigger bush. The son, George W. Bush, the 43rd President of the United States. Now, 4 years later, after another war with Iraq, another deficit buildup, and staggering job losses at home, it's time to weed the garden again. But this bush can't be trimmed. This bush needs to be ripped out by the roots. Help us weed the garden and go to our website at www.waxbush2004.com. It's time to wax Bush once and for all.
Mark Maron here, coming in for landing on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley and Sue Ellicott on Air America Radio. Really sorry about not getting to your calls. Douglas Rushkoff was here. I know he was very provocative and exciting, and he had to go because we knew that if we kept him here, we'd be here all day long, and we'll have to, you know, figure out a way to do that next
time. What to do with Unfiltered.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, we're taking over the station just to address the Jewish issue. But he's very engaging. And speaking of religion of sorts, I think it's time for our morning devotional. Dear Lord, yesterday your servant George W. Bush praised the Brown versus the Board of Education ruling that barred segregation from our schools. Great. Then he turned around and once again called for a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. Why do you let him do that? Now, Lord, we know you appointed him personally. So the flow chart is like this. You, Bush, and then us. I get it. So if Bush speaks for you, are you in favor of discrimination or what, Lord? The Bible doesn't really help. We looked. Jesus is against discrimination. Love thy neighbor as thyself. That's pretty clear. But the Old Testament is full of stuff like slavery and plagues and floods. But nothing at all on gay marriage. So does that mean it's okay to enslave gay people? Can you flesh it out? Flesh it out for us, God. Because I don't think that's going to work. The logistics would be a nightmare. So, Lord, help us figure out when we should pay attention to Bush and when we should just let go. P.S. We're getting pretty good at the letting go thing. He's going down, Lord. Amen.
Amen.
That was a powerful, powerful, powerful prayer.
You've got this he's going down thing kind of down pat, don't you?
You know, I
you feel it. You're feeling it.
Yeah, you know, I feel it, but, you know, there's something. Don't you ever get, does this administration personally frighten you?
No, I mean, it personally nauseates me.
Appall me.
But I'm not, appalling is like, you know, from a distance. Like, I, you know, maybe it's because I'm self-centered or maybe it's because I'm generally paranoid. But, like, I get frightened, you know, on a very intimate level that, you know, like, I guess not unlike, well, I mean, Howard Stern is obviously challenging him head on. But I get so paranoid about, like, people who work for Bush or whatever and who's listening to the show that, you know, sometimes I just get scared, man.
But maybe
get,
for me it's a little bit different because although I live it and have lived here for 15 years, I can't actually vote. You know, I have a green card but no citizenship, so it affects my life in a very deep way. But for me, there's a sense of being quite powerless. Apart from speaking out and being, I can't actually contribute to voting anybody in or out of office yet. Give me 18 more months and I can do it.
But you know what? There's a middle ground between the things that the two of you have articulated. He's scared that somebody from the Bush administration is actually going to come after him in some way, shape, or form. You, on the other hand, are concerned with voting. What happens, because you go through a lot more airports right now than he does. They can come after you a lot easier than they can.
Yeah, I'm swiped on a computer screen by immigration twice a week right now.
Yeah.
He just said,
and they grill me, man. When I went out on Friday night and I came back Sunday, they're like, how long have you been out of the country? I said, one day. And then why do they ask? They can see on the computer I've been out for one day.
See, here's the difference between me and you. If I went to the airport and they didn't check me, I'd be like, am I not making an impact? Don't you know who I am? I'm on Air America Radio. Could somebody search me? Because I'm important. I'm saying things.
I'm nothing. Like, just get me through. I don't want to waste 30 minutes here. I've only got 36 hours in London with my kids, and every minute counts.
I just want to be special.
Whoa.
Hey, there's the facts from the Streisand compound with our liberal agenda for today, May 18th. Get your pencils and pads and papers and pens. Liberal soldiers, here are your marching orders. One, seriously consider voting in the upcoming presidential election rather than just saying you will and then not doing it. How about that? Two, support plan for American Olympic athletes to graciously lose gold medals in basketball, swimming, and track. Just to help out, you know, to balance things out. Three, summer's almost here. Prepare costumes for Renaissance Festival, Burning Man Festival, and assorted gay-themed weddings.
Fun.
Okay. Four, protest prison abuse at Abu Ghraib. For 2 days, eat nothing but wheatgrass and protein shakes. That should make a statement. Five, plan tanning for Carrie fundraiser. Them's your marching orders for today. Do what you will. Thanks for being here.
All right. Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, Robert Reich is here. And we mean here. And he's getting the band back together. Plus, Mark Crispin Miller is back to tell us how the government is messing with your mind. That's tomorrow's morning's edition here on Air America Radio.
Spring. Spring is my least favorite season. My allergies act up so bad, I feel like I need one of those surgeon's masks to go outside. I tried Claritin and Benadryl Allergy, but they never really worked for me. Then I found out they're only made to help some of my symptoms. I needed something that would help all of them.
Tylenol Allergy Sinus provides complete relief from itchy, watery eyes and runny nose, as well as sinus pain, pressure, and congestion. Stop. Think. Tylenol. Use only as directed.
LendingTree.com presents 2 steps for controlling the home buying process. Step 1. Go to LendingTree.com and get up to 4 great mortgage offers within hours. Step 2. Stay at LendingTree.com and get up to 4 leading real estate agents within hours. So, to choose the mortgage and agent that's right for you, call 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. See website for details and state license disclosures. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
This is Air America Radio News. Good morning. I'm Wayne Gilman, the nonpartisan.